eternally drawn to that hinterland between authoritarianism and security. It's probably one of those quotes that it turns out Voltaire didn't say after all, but anybody who is prepared to sacrifice their liberty upon the altar of security deserves neither, has a certain resonance to it, doesn't it? And yet, I don't have the viscerally negative response to the idea of facial recognition cameras that I might expect myself to. I do, however, have a lot of thoughts about Wes Streeting's review into ADHD diagnosis.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, civil liberties groups have criticised Home Office plans to ramp up the use of live facial recognition by police forces. A public consultation is starting on how controversial systems should be governed. It's already led to 1,300 arrests in London. The Shadow Policing Minister, Matt Vickers, says the technology is a power for good.
It is a no-brainer. Of course, you need to look at what the processes and procedures are around it to make sure it's used lawfully and professionally. But actually, it can make our policing so much more efficient and make a real difference. The last government rolled it out. Police forces across the country are using it to great effect to catch some of the most heinous and vile criminals around.
Household energy bills will rise by around £100 by 2031 under plans to upgrade the UK's power networks. Ofgem says the charges would be even higher without the £28 billion investment. The Health Secretary has ordered a review into the rising demand for mental health services in England. Wes Streeting is said to be concerned about the number of people with conditions like ADHD and autism claiming benefits. The figure's risen by 1.2 million since 2019. The public health lecturer Dr. Simon Williams says that's partly a result of better diagnosis.
What the review should do is really look at what is it that is creating a society where we have so much mental health. And I think the earlier we can catch these things, oftentimes adolescent, even childhood mental or should I say emotional problems and unrest can turn, if untreated, if unrecognized, into adult mental health problems.
Britain and Norway have signed a defence pact to counter Russian submarine activity. The deal, combining their warship patrols, is aimed at protecting critical undersea cables in the North Atlantic. The mayor of the Liverpool City region has announced plans to bring the city's Dockland back to life. Steve Rotherham says the regeneration will deliver thousands of homes and commercial space near the new Everton Stadium. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down at 9 points at 96.97. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, rain moving northeastwards across the UK, brighter with showers in southern England, Wales and Northern Ireland, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together, they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/nectar-prices.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning indeed to you. What if it just is? What if it just is? It's just a thing that is happening. There are questions to ask about why and what we should be doing about it, but is it helpful to ask a question about whether it is really happening? Because what if it just is? Would we ever satisfactorily establish that it is just happening in the minds of the people who will always be convinced that it isn't? I speak of Wes Streeting's decision to launch an independent review into rising demand for mental health, ADHD and autism services in England. And it will look at both whether there is evidence of overdiagnosis and what gaps in support exist. And that speaks directly to the question that I just asked you. What if it just is? What if there is no overdiagnosis, or where there is so little overdiagnosis that it makes no difference whatsoever to the overall numbers? Because it speaks so directly to the narrative of lies, the narrative of lead swinging, the narrative of faking it or pretending or exaggerating in pursuit of some often unspecified goal, usually benefits related, usually welfare related, that there's always a danger with this stuff, that it will do more harm than good. You know, there is no smoke without fire. Why on earth would you have an investigation into overdiagnosis if there were no overdiagnosis? But, you know, I might be sounding a bit naive to you, a bit too trusting. I often think that we run very real risks in our society, and probably all societies that are free, of taking extreme examples and promoting or pretending that they are representative of the whole. You know what I mean. You find one bad apple and you use that bad apple to malign and denigrate the entire barrel. I mean, it is a good business model in some senses. It's very effective politically for populists and bigots and both. You find one bad apple and you use that bad apple to malign an entire barrel. It never happens to majorities in societies. You will never see a crime being committed, for example, by a middle-aged, middle-class white man and wake up the next morning as a middle-aged, middle-class white man thinking, oh no, here we go again. I don't know that we can stress this point enough, actually. As a middle-aged, middle-class white man, or any class at all, just as a white British man in this country, you are never going to wake up in the morning, hear the news headlines and think, oh no, my life's going to get harder today because I share characteristics and attributes with that person. If you're from an ethnic minority, you know what that feels like. If you're Muslim, you know what that feels like. If you're Jewish, you know what that feels like historically and currently. But if you are a white, British, Anglo-Saxon, I don't know what phrase you want to use, but somebody who is not a member of any minority, because of course if you're gay, you may get caught up in some of this. Different levels for different groups, but if you are of the majority, the homogenous majority, you will never know what that feels like. And listen, I'm not particularly on my high horse yet this morning. Note the yet, please. I'm not in my pulpit yet. I'm just pointing it out because some people still pretend not to understand what phrases like white privilege mean. You will never know what it's like to hear about a terror attack or a terrible crime being committed by somebody with whom you share attributes and feel fear if the attributes you currently have are essentially part of the homogenous majority. So what is it about you that we should be having evidence or an inquiry about overdiagnosis of? What is it about you that Wes Streeting thinks we should treat with suspicion? I don't know. But it ain't going to be something that the homogenous majority of the population have. You can be sure of this. Okay, so park that, semicolon. No, full stop, new paragraph. But what if there is an epidemic of overdiagnosis? Then it is in all our interests to address it. I don't think there's anything controversial about identifying the other area of this inquiry where people with health problems, mental health problems, or ADHD or autism have been let down. The system has not been able to keep up with the pace of change, with the extreme increase in diagnoses. Some of the waiting lists are absolutely unbearable. And of course, in the fourth or fifth paragraph of whatever story you are reading with regard to this inquiry launched by Wes Streeting, you will read that it comes as ministers seek to tackle a growing welfare bill. So, full stop, new paragraph, there goes the alarm bell again. You are approaching these diagnoses with a presumption, I think, of suspicion. Otherwise, you wouldn't even be mooting the possibility of overdiagnosis. So, listen, the reason I'm pointing this out to you, and I apologise if it didn't need pointing out, but sometimes I need to get my own thoughts in order before I start asking you what yours are. The reason I'm pointing this out to you is that it is one of those stories where there are cases, there are opposing cases to be made, but somewhere in between those opposing cases, in the hinterland, tone becomes crucially important. So are we overdiagnosing? Who is going to be able to answer that question except anecdotally? And by anecdotally, I mean about other people. Two types of anecdote. There's a story you tell me about yourself, about your authentic self. And then there's a story you tell me about someone else who's not you. If you were to break those down, the authentic stories would never really speak to overdiagnosis. You're unlikely, although you are, of course, welcome to. You are unlikely to ring me and say, I am swinging the lead, James. I am having a laugh. I am living the life of Riley, pretending to have this, that and the other. And they've given me a free car. Of course, that could never happen in quite the extreme terms that I've just described. And B, it would be a very odd thing to cough to live on national radio. The authentic experience will be my life has been utterly transformed for the better by a diagnosis. And it's clear to me, you would say, that we have been languishing in ignorance for decades, for generations, because when my boy got his diagnosis, I realized that I had been living with the burdens he carried for my entire life. And only now are they being lightened by receiving a similar diagnosis. So what if it just is? What if it just is? What if we have been going about our lives without knowing that our neurodiversity was something that could be addressed and our life could therefore be improved? I took myself a little bit by surprise last time we addressed this issue by how emotional I found myself getting when I recalled being naughty as a child. And it's a weird word, naughty. It's actually quite a horrible burden to carry. What you do if you're labelled naughty at quite a young age is accommodate it, possibly even pretend that you celebrate it. I'm the naughty child. I am the rebel. I am the naughty child. I am the maverick. But it's a horrible position. The younger you are, the more horrible it actually is, the more cognitive dissonance you need to pretend that it's not a horrible thing that you're doing. Because what if naughtiness, as we call it, what if naughtiness is not a lifestyle choice? Think back to your school days now, right? Think of the, quotes, naughtiest, end quotes, child in your class. Do you reckon they chose to be that way? Do you reckon they woke up every morning and thought, I'm going to get thrown out of class today because I love it. I'm going to get into trouble today. I'm going to get into a fight today. I'm going to get lamped by a teacher today. Do you reckon? Honestly, hand on heart, some maybe, but I bet you there's stuff going on at home, even if they don't have any neurodiversity. There's a heck of a lot of stuff going on at home that might explain their behaviour in school. But think back. I reckon you can name them now. The naughtiest boys, the naughtiest girls in your class. If you were at school in Chaddesley Corbett between 1979 and 1984, you might be thinking of me at this point. We had a very helpful metric to work out who the naughtiest boys were. We got beaten the most by the grown man who was our headmaster. Do you reckon we wanted that or liked that? You go into the room and get battered formally by a 6'4" man and then say thank you, sir, on your way out of the room because we're naughty, because we chose to be naughty. We got into trouble because we went through a rational set of choices and decisions and opted to go that way. And, of course, most of us in the 1970s and the 1980s had not had any diagnoses at all. We'd never heard of ADHD. We didn't know what it was. And now I want you to think about, what word can I use here? Because I don't want to suggest an adjective, because they are all unpleasant and unkind. The child in your class who you know now, had autism. But you wouldn't have known the word at the time. There was a lovely boy in the year below me, during the period that I've just described about, who was obsessed with the washing machines. We had a little laundry. It was a boarding school. So we had a little laundry in the school grounds. And every morning break, he would go there and just sit and watch the washing machines. I hope he didn't get bullied, but he certainly got teased. And who knows where the difference is between those two things. But do you see what I mean? What word do you use to describe that boy? You know what words you would have used at the time. You know what words you would have applied to him at the time. Not even unkindly necessarily, but because our vocabularies didn't stretch to a more sophisticated analysis. But you would call him, and forgive me, I'm now going to say some of the words that you might have reached for, odd or strange. or weird, or worse. So think of the naughtiest child in your class, and think of the oddest child, or the least regimented, the strangest. I don't like those words. I want better words, but I'm working with them now. And tell me whether or not they were choosing to be in the categories that we're now describing. And I think that's a really helpful way into understanding what has happened in our society subsequently. I really do. And it's not going to just be the stuff that Streeting is looking at. Dyspraxia is a fascinating thing. I discovered it on this programme. Dyspraxia, I'd never heard of. Dyslexia was relatively new when I was at school, but dyspraxia, and I'll probably get it a little bit wrong, but it is essentially a sort of physical manifestation of dyslexia, what you might call a clumsiness. So now think of the clumsiest child in your class at school. There's three children there now. You've got the clumsiest, you've got the most eccentric. That's a nice word to use, perhaps, a better word to use, the most eccentric. And you've got the naughtiest. Now, what do you reckon? Do you reckon they were all waking up every morning and saying, right, I'm going to knock over the inkpot today. I'm very old. Not quite as old as my Spotify profile would suggest. My Spotify Wrapped profile would suggest. But, you know, I'm going to fall over the desk today. I'm going to score an own goal. I'm going to trip over my own shoelace. Do you think they woke up in the morning and said that they were going to do that? I don't know what the phoning is this morning, because I can't get past the what if it is just real. What if there is no overdiagnosis? What if we're just waking up to the tapestry of humanity in ways that previous generations were not alive to, were not awake to, so that those three children, unless they were lucky enough to go to a school like mine, an expensive school, a school where one-on-one care was normal and commonplace, a school where teachers would be looking out, not so much with the naughty kids, although even they found champions and heroes and heroines, but certainly for the, quotes, eccentric, end quotes, kids, or the clumsy kids, there'd be paths that were found for them to flourish and to thrive. At both of my schools, that would happen. My big school, my public school, made a great play, partly because of its Catholic ethos, its Christian ethos, made a great play of finding something that everybody was good at, finding something that everybody could flourish at. Everybody had a thing that they were good at. How likely was that to happen in your school? How likely was that to happen to you? The tapestry of humanity is rich and varied, and we're only now beginning to discover just how many different coloured threads there are, weaving us all together. And Wes Streeting wants to have an inquiry into whether or not we're recognising too many different coloured threads, whether or not we should all try a little bit harder to be monochrome, whether or not we should be perfectly happy with black and white blankets instead of multicoloured ones, amazing technicoloured dream coats in one corner and sepia-tinted Victorian vistas in the other. I don't know. I don't even know where all this is coming from, to be honest with you. But I hate this story, and I'm surprised how much it troubles me. Because over-diagnosis denies the reality of all the children we've just talked about. Just because we didn't have a name for it when we were kids doesn't mean it's not real. So, this might not work, all right? But I'm in one of those moods. If it doesn't work, I'll draw a line under it at 10:30 and we'll start the same conversation in a different way. I'll come up with a more traditional question. But all I've got for you at 10:18 this morning is this. What if it's just real? So, come to me with your story of the reality of this situation. Tell me how you feel about the words overdiagnosis, about the words inquiry, an inquiry born of suspicion. It will look at both whether there is evidence of overdiagnosis and what gaps in support exist. Why not just start with the gaps instead of allowing people of all political persuasions? I was naively of the view once that it would just be right-wingers who hate the idea of spending money on anybody in society except themselves. But why? Why are we even floating the boat, floating the balloon of overdiagnosis? And listen, I don't want you to feel that you can't contribute to the programme if you think that we are. but I doubt very much you'd be able to prove it. Whereas it's incredibly easy to prove that there has been an enormous uptick in entirely authentic, genuine and bona fide diagnoses. What if it's just real? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
Mate, did you know you could win £100 worth of points when you scan your BP Me Rewards card?
Yes.
And that can be spent on M&S or Amazon vouchers?
Yes.
Oh, what would I get? Oh, new shoes for Macy, socks for Dad, a scarf for Mum, bottle of red for
scan
me.
Your BP Me Rewards card with every purchase of BP and you could win £100 worth of points every hour. So, don't just scan, scan to win.
What would you get?
Fuel and earplugs.
Offer ends 2nd of January 2026. Participating stores only. T's and C's apply. For details, see bpmerewards.co.uk.
Get hosting sorted with Black Friday deals on the UK's best broadband technology.
Oh, yeah?
Keep the extra guests entertained this winter with EETV.
So I can watch all me crime dramas.
While the rest of us have the football on.
That's right. Switch up subscriptions with Netflix Now, TNT Sports, and Discovery Plus. All powered by EE's ultra-fast full fiber. Sign me up. Switch to our award-winning bundles today.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
Now, let me ask y'all a question. Are you ready to ditch the crowds and the cookie-cutter holidays? I'm talking quiet mornings spent by crystal-clear lakes. Cruising across the vast landscapes of Canada and the US at a leisurely pace. Stopping at charming towns and saying howdy. Go deeper with littleamerica.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
21 minutes after 10. A lot of you are a little bit more generous spirited than me, which is nice, because you point out perfectly plausibly that Wes Streeting may be seeking to prove that there isn't any overdiagnosis. And how do you prove that there isn't any overdiagnosis without having an inquiry into whether there is overdiagnosis? But it seems to me that you're letting the narrative be set, or you're following a narrative set by ghouls like that Richard Tice character who was complaining the other day about children, autistic children, because it will almost always be autistic children who wear ear defenders because their hypersensitivity to noise makes their life unbearable without them. But you would never have seen children in ear defenders when we were at school. Therefore, these conditions must not be real. It is a right-wing position to adopt, but it doesn't mean that overdiagnosis doesn't exist. I just doubt it. And I wonder what you think and why. Michael's in Canterbury. Michael, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think there's a massive sort of level of ignorance still around the diagnosis. I think we're just touching the tip of the iceberg. As someone who's 53 now, diagnosed when I was 52 in January, my diagnosis came out of my stepchild, Rue, getting diagnosed, and my partner gradually dropping the odd hint of, do you think, Mick, that you might have some of these issues with my being overwhelmed and literally struggling to get through the day, you know, just getting up in the morning and everything's like, feels like the whole world is in front of you and you just can't get through. So to hear, like, you know, Wes Streeting, I give it the lip service it deserves. I mean, let's see what happens. But from my
what
experience,
we're not. What difference has the diagnosis made?
Crikey, it's literally, I'm 53 now, so I'm, you know, same age as yourself, and
I'm 74 according to Spotify.
Yeah, yeah, same here. My work is not great, but that's another matter. But no, it's just me. So let's just say, imagine 10 bricks built up in front of you with everything you've got to do in the day.
Yeah.
I take my medication. Half hour later, my whole day, those bricks are broken down and put in front of me, and I can just go about my day.
Wow.
I work for a large pharmaceutical company. I've got a very supportive manager. I'm having the best year ever.
Really?
Yeah. It's been radically changed my life, and I can't thank the people who support me through it, my family, you know, the provider. Getting the actual diagnosis is the thing. You know, people go through the NHS and you say, but years. A lot of people don't realise about right to choose in England and stuff like that. So that's the thing. We're still being held back.
Is it possible?
Very difficult.
Is it possible that some neurodiversities, ADHD included, make us less likely to seek a diagnosis, because it's quite a faff. You've got to provide another brick. You've got to get another brick. Oh, bloody hell, I've got to get
Absolutely.
A diagnosis now as well.
And I'm
already overwhelmed.
I've got to fill in more forms and get on the phone to people. Absolutely. But, you know, and it all depends how it impacts you. I can see from my life how incredibly debilitating it's been, and it's held me back. I've had to grieve that process. I had to go through that and unwrap that, and it's taken some time and effort, but I can only look forward now, and that's
a beautiful place to be in. It's a beautiful place to be in. And so this word overdiagnosis, give him the biggest benefit of the doubt and say it might well be that this inquiry provides proof that there isn't any, but the real people, the problematic people in this conversation, aren't going to believe it when that happens. You've got this Tice character talking about ear defenders being a problem. You could have all the inquiries in the world, and it's not going to pierce the inch-thick carapace of his so-called skull.
Really good ear defenders are the perfect antidote to someone like Richard.
It should make them compulsory. Nicely put. And so two generations there. I didn't know Mike was going to be on the other end of the line when I said, you know, your child, in his case, a stepson, gets the diagnosis, and you realise that you do too. How do we greet this word, over-diagnosis? Is it in any way likely to prove helpful? 0345 60 60 973. Deborah is in Sidcup. Deborah, what would you like to say?
Hello. Hello. I'm just really distressed by this over-diagnosing claim, because I think it's making things really, really difficult for people who are... It's already very difficult. My daughter, who's in her 40s, she was diagnosed with ADHD just over a year ago. And she's been struggling to... She was privately diagnosed, but she's been struggling to get onto the NHS pathway with her medication.
Yes.
My grandson, he has autism and ADHD. There's a 3-year wait for medication for him, and he is really struggling. I mean, my daughter's never had a day off work because of her illness at all, so it's not that she's scamming welfare and wanting to use it as an excuse.
No.
It's just so, so hard. My grandson uses ear defenders in class. It makes such a difference to him.
Of course it does. Actually, no, let's not gloss over that, because they're a little bit obsessed with this program, that lot. Just a couple of sentences, if you would, on the difference that those ear defenders make to that little boy's life.
They're crucial. They're absolutely crucial. They are crucial for him to be able to concentrate and do his work, because loud noise is torture for him. Or, you know, he uses them for all sorts of things, but it's vital. But also the medication will be vital, because I've seen the difference it's made with my daughter. It's revolutionised her life. And I want the same thing for my grandson.
Oh, of course you do. What about this?
And I also feel guilty with this over-diagnosing. I look back now and I think, why didn't I notice that with my daughter? Because nobody spoke about it. It wasn't that it wasn't there.
Yeah.
I look back now and I look and I think, how could you have missed that? And I thought, well, don't feel guilty, because nobody spoke about it.
No, we didn't even know it. I mean, it was dyslexia was new when I was a kid. Dyslexia was a new thing that we were still a little bit wary of and thought, come off it. We called it thick in my day, but of course we know that it was nothing of the sort.
Exactly. And it's only when you look back, and I look back and I thought, yes, all the things I see in my grandson, yes, you did. You did have them, and I missed them, but it wasn't my fault.
No, it wasn't. It categorically wasn't your fault. And how wonderful that society appears to be approaching a place where fewer and fewer parents will be in the position you have put yourself in future years. Just to be the devil's advocate for 20 seconds, Deborah, what if there are people in front of your daughter and your grandson in the queue who are swinging the lead? And I mean, I don't necessarily think that it's likely, but everything is possible, and therefore this inquiry somehow, goodness only knows how, will identify them and therefore shorten the length of the queue.
I think that would be useful if that were the case, but I think it needs to be framed in a far more
thoughtful,
neurodivergent friendly way, because if it's made clear that that is why they are looking at it, but it seems to be constantly slanted from, this is one way of slashing the welfare bill.
Well, it always appears in the story, and that's why, you know, I'm always careful about which... I read all of them, but I'm always careful of which versions of a story I choose to have in front of me when we start talking about it on the radio. So I went with the BBC today, because, you know, for all their myriad faults, that they won't be indulging in abuse of children wearing ear defenders type rhetoric, or it was just called stupid in my day, or we used to just call it naughty. There's no such thing as ADHD. There's no such thing as autism. These people exist and their voices are very, very loud. But the BBC reaches, at the reference to the welfare in paragraph 2, 3, 4, 5, talks about how, the government thinks that some people may be referred to waiting lists who do not need treatment. I wonder how big that percentage would have to be for it to become pertinent. Because if it's 5%, then you'd rather deal with that. You know, you always have to suck up a little bit of imperfection in order to provide the best available service. So you're always in any system, even with unemployment benefit, which people still like to get very excited about, even if you find someone who is swinging the lead, it is not a reason to dismantle or start cutting holes in the safety net that is there to catch everybody else. I wonder how big the percentage would have to be for over-diagnosis, if it's even a thing, to be relevant to the overall conversation. And I think it would have to be pretty big, and I don't think it is. I really don't. Thank you, Deborah. Lovely stuff. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
Police could use the passport database as part of an expansion of facial recognition technology. Ministers want more forces to use the systems, but civil liberties campaigners say that risks creating a surveillance state. The energy regulator Ofgem has approved plans to spend £28 billion on network upgrades. Household bills will go up by £108 by 2031 as a result, but the watchdog says it will deliver long-term savings. The number of people in hospital in England with flu is more than 50% higher than a year ago. An average of more than 1,700 patients were in beds in England each day last week. LBC weather, rain moving northeastwards across the country, brighter with showers in southern England, Wales and Northern Ireland, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Kev, it's Black Friday madness. Customers, calls, emails.
Then you need something built for busy, like iPhone 17. And right now, you can save £144 on a 36-month plan in EE's Black Friday sale. iPhone 17, a delight at work, even when your coffee's gone cold.
Nice one, Kev. Have a fresh hot coffee on me.
Search EE Business today. BT and EE, better for business.
Excludes 20% VAT, ends 4th December. Terms apply.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's possible that there is a genuine prejudice here, but some prejudices are unconscious. I've got a joke. It's not a brilliant joke, but I'm really pleased with it about the way they treat Rachel Reeves. Did you hear yesterday's update on that chess story? Everyone's gone mad, haven't they, with regard to Rachel Reeves? I mean, a signally imperfect chancellor huge problems in her performance. But that's true of all chancellors. Yesterday, they tried to turn her childhood chess championships into a story. And the truth emerged a little later in the day. I shared it with you at the time, but I may share it with you again later, because even by the standards of our absolutely insane right-wing media, the Rachel Reeves chess championship story was unbelievable. It was a fine example of what I like to call, wait for it, Rachel prejudice. No? No. I was really pleased with that. You don't deserve me. It's no good just sending me screenshots of your Spotify Wrapped with me in the top five. I expect laughter. I expect gales of laughter in response to puns like that. All right, I don't. But I do know that a lot of prejudices are entirely unconscious, subconscious. So because mental health is invisible, often, not always by any stretch of the imagination, but often, we perhaps still inhabit a society where politicians like Wes Streeting are a lot more comfortable talking about overdiagnosis than they would be, for example, in the context of prostate cancer. No one is ever going to say there's been a huge uptick in prostate cancer diagnoses, largely because we're testing earlier and better and more widely, brackets. There's been a huge uptick in prostate cancer diagnoses. I'm going to launch an inquiry into whether we are overdiagnosing prostate cancer. Do you see what I mean? It's not an absolutely watertight comparison. It's not perfect. But I think it merits a little nod, doesn't it, of recognition. And any visible disability or condition is highly unlikely to fall under the suspicion of overdiagnosis. But everything from ADHD to autism, and there's lots of things in between, other mental health conditions up to and including depression, we can be suspicious by. I suppose you can't fake a prostate cancer diagnosis unless, you know, you kind of behave very oddly and start doing stuff on the internet with Photoshop and things. But how likely would the conversation ever be in the context of diagnoses rocketing because of recognition, testing and identification, if it was a visible condition as opposed to an invisible one? Just another thought for you. Aisling is in Surbiton. Aisling, what would you like to say?
Hello. Hey. Oh, God, I have so much I'd like to say about the overdiagnosis thing and everything, but I'd really just like to tell you two stories.
Okay.
One is about me and one is about my daughter. My daughter is 14. She was diagnosed as autistic at 6 after 3 years. She had EBSA in about 16, 18 months ago, which means emotionally based school avoidance. So basically, because of her anxiety around attending school, because of her autism and her sensory problems, she couldn't go to school. She just stopped. She's cognitively very, very able. So it was just like a complete shock for everybody in the school and everything. But because she has an EHCP and we knew she was autistic and the school was really supportive, we were able to get through that period, and she's now in a smaller independent school where she is doing brilliantly again after 18 months out of school. She's getting 9s and 8s in her.
So diagnosis sets you free.
It sets her free. Yeah, absolutely. She still has loads of challenges has to overcome.
Of course.
But she's getting the support. She wants to be a lawyer. There's no reason why she shouldn't be, and, you know, live an incredibly productive life. So that's what happens when you get a little bit of support. And I've had to fight for every bit of that. And she doesn't get as much as she should, but it's still, you know, it's brilliant. My situation is that back in the 80s at school, I couldn't go to school from much earlier than her age, from 5 or 6. I had to stay home quite regularly. And by the time I got to my teens, I was out for literally months at a time. So it was a huge, huge problem between the school and my family and my extended family and friends. And I was ostracized at school because I was just seen as this weird person who was taking the proverbial and not coming to school when she didn't feel like
this
it.
This is the absolute crux of it, isn't it? Because that idea that you were somehow doing all this on purpose lies at the heart of the narrative of overdiagnosis, I think.
Yes.
Well, people pretending in order to access the pittance that is available on benefits. And the number of children that need an EHCP versus the number of children who've got one is a national shame. But that thing there is changing, right? I mean,
it was changing, but it doesn't feel like it is anymore. I mean, I was saying to your researcher that she asked me if I was happy about this STEM review. And I was, in theory, because... You know, it's not working. The process is not working for the young people and children who need support and their carers who are trying to help them. But it feels like it's been framed now. The narrative is being framed as just another one of these scapegoat issues.
Yes.
You know, of they're taking the you know what, they're looking for money. They're just sort of getting a ticket out of life.
And even lower down the sort of hierarchy of prejudice, it would be, well, it's all very sad and I'm very sorry for you, but we can't afford to look after everybody. So you actually end up in the long term, I wish there was a word for this, there probably is, I just don't know what it is, of the decision not to spend money, because EHCPs are expensive for local authorities, can be, not to spend money in the short term, but it ends up, of course, costing society a heck of a lot more money in the long term.
A great deal more, and not to mention all the... I mean, I, for instance, have not been able to work properly for the last 2 years because I've had to... And I'm lucky I'm in that position that was possible. It's financially really hurt us, but we were still able to do it because I had to be there. I had to take her to school. I had to wait to see if I could get her in. I had to bring her home again. I had to go back and get her. I had to take her to the provision. I had to take her to the therapy. I had to take her to the CAMS appointments. I had to be constantly around to support her. So
and
we
if she didn't, and if she,
for that,
no, and if her situation didn't improve, I know you know this, but for the benefit of people listening, then that could have been your role for the rest of her life, or at least for the rest of your life. But by getting the help that she needs, this is why you opened your conversation by saying that she wants to be a lawyer and she's doing really well at school, she becomes a different person from what she would have been without help.
Yeah, absolutely. And can I just say also about the air defenders?
Yes.
So she was in a very large mainstream school to begin with when she went into secondary school. And she had to wear ear defenders every single day, all day long, because of the sensory issues. You know, the bells going off, the screaming, the shouting, the noise. And she didn't want to be wearing ear defenders. She's, you know, being sort of...
Because it makes you... No kid wants to stand out.
No kid wants to stand out. And it was also hurting her. She had ear infections. She had a lockjaw thing at one point. So it's not a happy, choice to decide to do something like that. You do it because you have no other choice, because things are just unbearably painful. And, you know, there isn't a choice in it. And the other thing I'd also like to say, if I can just hijack you for a little bit longer.
Yeah, go on.
Is the idea about this, well, first of all, neurodiversity is not a mental health issue. And the idea that people are just jumping on to, oh, I'm going to go for an ADHD assessment because it's trendy or because they think they can get something out of it. You have to show when you're being assessed that it goes back. You know, it didn't just start yesterday, that it's something you have lived with all your life. So it's not that people are just, you know, getting more and more diagnoses when they don't deserve it. We're just starting to open up our eyes to what's really out there. And in my case, I dropped out of school when I was 16 or 17 because I couldn't go to school. And that is not what we should be looking for.
No, because, of course, you could have done, but only with the sort of help and support that you've managed to secure for your daughter. And I want to make just another point, another stress on what Aisling described about being able to do that. It's not just the financial wherewithal, albeit that people will struggle to do what she did. Some people will be signally incapable of being able to do what she did in terms of giving up work and providing that level of care. And company for a child as they receive or seek the help that they need. But the other element of it, of course, is that it takes a certain type of person as well. We're not all very good at pushing our way to the front of a crowd or saying the system is wrong or that this needs to be different, telling a teacher that they are approaching your child wrongly. takes a certain type of character. Not better or worse than other types of character, but a certain type of character that not all of us possess. Speaking of characters, I had to double-check this story because I thought it might have been exaggerated, and it happened earlier today on a different radio station. But the man who has a massive problem with children who wear ear defenders has described the allegations of hideous anti-Semitism levelled at Nigel Farage as lefty twaddle. This is Richard Tice's contribution to a national conversation that is gathering volume, despite the fact that Nigel Farage is currently hiding and really hoping this will go away. So I'm going to break cover slightly on this with regard to Peter Otegui, the BAFTA and Emmy award-winning director, who has recalled Farage sidling up to him at school and saying, "Hitler was right," and gas them, sometimes adding a long hiss to simulate the sound of the gas chambers. But I'm going to tell you that Peter, because I'm sure that he won't mind me telling you this now, Peter told me exactly that story in person, face-to-face, quite a few years ago. So when Richard Tice comes out and accuses him of lying and claims that it is only being done now by people who are lying because they want to stop Nigel Farage from becoming Prime Minister, I can tell you, I can't remember the exact month, but Peter told me that in either November or December of 2018, face-to-face. I can remember the room I was standing in at the time, and I can remember him telling me, and I can remember him explaining why he didn't want to share these stories in person on the programme, but he wondered at the time whether or not I might be able to work them into. My first book was just out. That was the event I was attending. So Richard Tice accusing Peter of lying because he has suddenly decided he doesn't want to, he doesn't want Nigel Farage to become Prime Minister, will, if he has any honour whatsoever, withdraw that accusation when he knows that I, James O'Brien, had a conversation with Peter Otegui in 2018, November or December of 2018, in which he told me exactly the same story. He made exactly the same allegations regarding Nigel Farage's anti-Semitism at Dulwich College during their shared school days. He made exactly those allegations to me in person in November or December of 2018, and I can pinpoint the date because I can remember the event that it happened at, long before anybody entertained the frankly ludicrous possibility of Nigel Farage becoming Prime Minister. So when that is brought to Richard Tice's attention and his rationale for accusing Peter of lying is revealed to be completely wrong, it's given the benefit of the doubt, even though he never gives it to anybody else. When he discovers that Peter has been sharing this hideous experience for at least 7 years, then he will have to withdraw his claim that he is lying in order to, or because he has suddenly become worried about Nigel Farage becoming Prime Minister. He's been telling the story for the best part of a decade, pal. You're going to need some very big ear defenders to avoid this piece of information.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Pubs have definitely been up against it in the last few years, but now we have this. As a result of a revaluation of business rates in the budget, the British Institute of Innkeepers says that the next few years will see fewer than 1 in 10 pubs actually be profitable. If you own a business on the high street, these business rate changes are causing you sleepless nights.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
It's the explosive number one bestseller that's been making headlines. Entitled, the jaw-dropping book on the former Duke of York. Meticulously researched, Entitled reveals claims of a spoilt prince unable to connect and an insecure duchess desperate for attention. Described as the most devastating royal biography ever written. Get the book that everyone will be talking about this Christmas. Entitled by Andrew Loney. Available now.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10 to 11, there it is. It was the 4th of March 2019, so 6 years ago. 6.5 years ago, the book itself came out in November of 2018. That's why I got confused a moment ago. The 4th of March 2019, when Peter Ategi told me exactly the same story about Nigel Farage's hideous anti-Semitism when they were at Dulwich College together that he has now chosen to go public with. So when Richard Tice accuses him of being a liar and being motivated by a desire to stop Nigel Farage becoming Prime Minister, then he would have to account for why Peter Ategi was telling exactly the same account, sharing exactly the same memories 6.5 years ago. And that's just me. There'll be other people from his past with whom he had shared these stories sooner. So there it is. Just something I thought was important to get out there. Because A, when you accuse somebody recalling anti-Semitic abuse of being a liar, you're moving into hideous territory, but because we are better people than some, we give people the opportunity to correct the record when they are given proof that they are wrong. In this case, the claim that this is a recent invention born of political bias is categorically untrue, because it is at least 6.5 years in the making, and obviously longer. 10:52 is the time. Speaking of Farage, he remains hiding because he's terrified even by all the soft soap journalists that he ordinarily breaks bread with. He's terrified of being asked about Russian bribes and anti-Semitism and racism. So oddly, a man with a season ticket for every studio in the country except this one, at least while I'm in it, is currently keeping an uncharacteristically low profile, but it doesn't stop him from making pronouncements unchallenged. Which racist trope do you think he has returned to today, despite the fact that he has been provided with incontrovertible evidence that he is behaving dishonourably? Is it A, the complaint about people speaking foreign on trains? Is it B, the complaint about school children not having English as their first language? Or is it C, the complaint about there being too many black people in adverts? Which racist trope has Nigel Farage revisited today, despite having been provided with absolutely incontrovertible evidence that his position is dishonest, dishonourable and flawed? Is it A, people speaking foreign on trains? B, children in primary schools who do not have English as their mother tongue? Or is it C, too many people of colour appearing in adverts? I'll share that with you shortly. 10:53 is the time. Back to overdiagnosis and the very real possibility that it's not a thing. And by entertaining the possibility that it might be, you potentially, Wes Streeting, make everything worse. Adam's in Wigan. Adam, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. You okay?
I'm all good.
I rang up just basically to share my experience and give an opinion on the overdiagnosis thing. So yeah. I've literally recently been diagnosed with autism and ADHD. it came as a complete shock to me, because for most of my life, I've just been dealing with anxiety, low mood, depression, and it's just sort of escalated through talking therapies, counselling, then onto psychology, then up to an actual psychiatrist whose sort of expertise is this diagnosis. And it's like going through questions and checking things. And one of your previous callers said, this isn't something that's easy to fake. It's they look at the people around you, your friends, your family, your employer, medical records. They basically go through everything with a fine-tooth comb, ask you questions, and it's like, oh, yeah, do you do this, do you do that? And it's like, yeah. And it's like, well, that's autism. so it's kind of like...
What did you feel in that moment? I mean, what was your, like, seriously, your sort of gut reaction?
No, it's not. It was my gut. I thought, no, it can't be. It's right. Literally, you know, because I've done so much personal growth and work on psychology. I've done cognitive behavioural therapy, dialectical behavioural therapy, compassion-focused therapy, done a lot.
Bloody hell.
and to be given, to be told by a medical professional, actually, that's autism. And we even started laughing further on because I wear the same sort of types of clothes.
Right.
And he said, well, that, there's a reason for that. It's because you're 37. You've found what you prefer, what clothes you like, because you have sensitivities to clothes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do I? I wouldn't know because I always wear the same clothes. And he said, well, there you go. That's the scaffolding.
You found what you're comfortable in and you've stuck with it, but you haven't clocked the reason why you're doing that thing.
That's it, yeah. So, and there's loads of little things I'm beginning to notice now, and this is what the diagnosis has done for me. It's making me stop and check, because one of the symptoms I've had all my life is this self-blame, that it's my fault, that I need to change this. And yet, there's been loads of work that I've done on accountability, because one of the traits that I have is I speak bluntly.
Right.
I don't quite understand the emotional sort of social aspect of things, so I say things which are quite awkward to most neurodivergent people, and I'm like, what's the problem? You know, I don't realise I'm saying it. And with that, I can be misunderstood and sort of tarred with the same brush as somebody who's being ignorant or
deliberately obtuse, being deliberately rude.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So that's been my experience of things. It's also unlocked for me where you were saying about in school, you told you're naughty. You know, I'm a father. I've got a little girl who's 7 years of age. And tragically, she's having to undergo the experience of her parents separating.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was like over 12 months ago.
Right.
And her behaviour's obviously become a little bit different, erratic, because it's been destabilised and deregulated. But as time's gone on, where she should be sort of getting used to this and stabilising, she's not doing. And she does the whole, she puts her hands on her ears with overwhelm. Uh-oh. And it's like, it's so easy for me, even being autistic and having this ADHD, but not realising it, to say, stop being naughty, this behaviour isn't acceptable.
And you catch yourself doing that, because it's a reflex, it's a social condition.
Yes, absolutely. Now I catch myself doing that, and I go, oh my goodness. Hang on a minute, this isn't naughty behaviour, this is overwhelm. And it allows me to put myself in my daughter's, how she's feeling, which is not something that's easy to me, because I'm people think I'm selfish, and it's not that I'm selfish, it's just that I process emotion differently and I get hit.
Wow, you're incredibly self-aware.
I mean,
that presumably is a consequence of a lot of things, but a lot of the therapy you've had has equipped you to cope with the diagnosis and to absorb the diagnosis better than you might have done otherwise.
That this is what I'm discovering now. So with ADHD, there are medications you can take which will assist you for maybe 10 to 14 hours, if, you know, depending on everybody's individual. But there's no medication to assist with the ADHD, so the therapy is absolutely crucial. So in terms of the global economics of things, or rather the national economics of things, Wigan, I think, is the number one town in the northwest of England with the highest suicide rates in men.
Is it really?
Obviously, this is an issue that's taking over the country in terms of suicide rates. Mental health has always been there under that broad title, but it has so many branches underneath mental health. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. This overdiagnosis of autism...
Overdiagnosis is just...
Yeah.
Underdiagnosis consigns people to a life of being misunderstood and being miserable.
Yeah, so I'm saying, well, there should be an overdiagnosis because, like I said to your producer...
What would you rather, over or under? It's that simple.
Yeah, like I said to your producer, if you go back to the 1930s and 40s, gay wasn't a thing. Nobody was gay back then. That wasn't a condition. But actually, yes, it was. It was just that people were adapting to the society.
Go back 20 years further, and we were shooting people dead for having... post-traumatic stress disorder, because they were being shot for desertion in the First World War.
Absolutely. Apply it to 2025, and you've got people like Nigel Farage blurting out what's on his mind, potentially not realising that that poor man himself could have ADHD undiagnosed.
That's a nice point, that. It's a really... Well, I was thinking that about Tice, not about Farage, actually. But that's very, very, very generous of you, in that someone speaking so crassly, which is a word I would use advisedly after your con, someone speaking in a way that is so utterly, utterly ignorant of feelings, it may be that he can't help it. And I don't say that with any side or snidiness whatsoever. It may just be that he can't help it, which is why I said a moment ago, now that I have told him about Peter Otegi's long history of sharing these memories of Nigel Farage's anti-Semitism at school, there is nothing to stop Richard Tice from withdrawing his hideous accusation that Peter is lying, or that he's just suddenly come up with these claims in order to score political points. Thank you, Adam. What an hour. What a call. What a shame that we're still looking at this inquiry.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, civil liberties groups have warned an expansion of facial recognition risks creating a surveillance state. The Home Office has announced plans for the controversial technology to be used by more police forces to fight crime. It's opened a consultation that could pave the way for new laws. Josie Allen from the charity Missing People says it's not just about catching criminals.
We think there's real opportunities for live facial recognition to help find people who are at immediate risk, whether they've been harmed by someone else or whether they're at risk of harming themselves. There's a real chance to use that technology. It's not being used loads at the moment. We know of a few incidents, but it's not being routinely used.
The government has ordered a review to look at the diagnosis of conditions like ADHD and autism. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is said to be concerned about the number of people with mental health conditions on the benefits. The figure has risen by 1.2 million since 2019. The Children's Minister, Josh McAllister, has told LBC it is a particular issue for younger people.
I've got 500 young people under the age of 25 in my own constituency who are out of work. Many of them have got mental health conditions and issues, and what is the best form of support to make sure that those young people get into work, have that social interaction.
Figures show the number of people in hospital in England with flu is more than 50% higher than a year ago. An average of more than 1,700 patients were in beds in England each day last week. Ministers have confirmed they will delay inaugural mayoral elections in four areas of England by 2 years. Votes in Essex, Hampshire and the Solent, Sussex and Brighton, and Norfolk and Suffolk will be held in May 2028. The Tories, Lib Dems and Reform have criticised the proposals. Liverpool Street in London has retained its title as Britain's busiest railway station. There were 98 million entries and exits in the year to April. That compares to just 68 at the least used station, Elton and Austin, in Nottinghamshire. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 96.95. That is up 3. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather. Most places seeing some rain. That's moving northeastwards across the UK, then becoming brighter with a few showers in southern England, Wales and Northern Ireland. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 11 is the time. We are going to return to this territory. Of course we are, because all of the traffic is moving in that direction. Oddly, I'm a little bit more upbeat about this inquiry, albeit that it features the word overdiagnosis, than I was at the beginning of the hour, because I don't think you can stand in the way of what is becoming increasingly clear. In fact, there is, would you believe, that there was an inquiry commissioned last year into ADHD reporting, and it was published in November of this year, as in last month. And among its findings is the following. My thanks to Beatrice for bringing this to my attention. We showed that in England there is consistent evidence that ADHD is under-recognised, under-diagnosed and under-treated. So I don't know whether the coverage of Wes Streeting's decision to hold an inquiry into potential overdiagnosis has been fairly reported. I suspect that it has, but they had an inquiry that concluded this year and was published last month, and it concluded that there is the opposite of overdiagnosis. There is, in fact, underdiagnosis. Make of that what you will. It adds a new dimension, doesn't it, to the question of what exactly he is doing this for and who exactly it is designed to appeal to. Best case scenario, ADHD appears in the headlines, but in fact, the independent review will be more about mental health and possibly autism services. And now to the tale of our times, really. Police forces will have access to passport and driving license photographs under plans being considered for the mass adoption of facial recognition territory technology, even. So they are going to build a database containing as many faces as possible, right? And if you then do something that means the authorities want to find you, they will be able to match footage taken from CCTV, doorbell cameras, dashboard cameras, other technologies, presumably, some of which don't even exist yet, and run it through the machine and find you. It has been described by the policing minister as the biggest breakthrough for catching criminals since DNA matching. But and again, it's not necessarily the thickest of ice that I feel beneath my feet when I say this, but they don't have a library of our DNA, regardless of whether or not we wanted them to have it. So, I mean, that's the problem here, isn't it? You're only going to be on this database, as far as I can understand, if you have come to the attention of the authorities. So, albeit that they will have access to passport and driving license photographs, the plans which are included in a consultation on new legislation would essentially free up police resources spent looking for people in order to identify them. Immigration databases will also be available to the police. You're looking at about a 2-year rollout for the implementation, but facial recognition technology, a database, if you like, of people that they are... there's a bit, you can tell from my voice, there's a little bit about this that I don't get. Will it have all of our faces in it? And that, in some ways, is the... both the fear and the question, isn't it? Because why shouldn't it? Why shouldn't it? I mean, you're not required to give DNA. I think it does. They're going to have access to passport and driving license photographs, which means they're going to have an enormous database. I'd look like, Elaine points out, like a lot of people, I also look like a criminal in my passport photograph. It's an extraordinarily unflattering picture, but happily it won't just be looking a bit dodgy that qualifies you for inclusion in this process. You're going to have retrospective facial recognition used to match crime scene footage against images on the police national database. And I still don't feel frightened. I mean, I do now. We've talked about this a few times. As it gets ever closer. Oh, do you know what I did last night? Of course you don't. That would be weird. I watched 12 Angry Men One of my daughters is studying film, among many other things, and she was required to watch 12 Angry Men, and I'm trying to watch a lot of these films with her for two reasons. One, it's lovely to spend time together, and secondly, there's quite a lot of gaps in my film watching. In terms of the absolute stone-cold classics, I couldn't remember whether I'd watched 12 Angry Men, and I don't think that I had. I might have seen it as a play about 30 years ago, because it began life as a play. But my goodness me, what an extraordinary piece of drama that is. And it changed the way I thought about jury trials, in a way, because none of David Lammy's proposals are going to come close to a murder trial. You can shout yet at the radio if you want, but it's not necessarily a justified response. But just watching, can we do a spoiler? We don't need a spoiler alert on a 50-year-old film, do we? Oh, really? Eleanor thinks perhaps we do. Okay. So watching the workings of jury deliberations, okay? That's not very exciting, is it? Watching the workings of jury deliberations. But it made me think slightly differently about the conversations we had last week about jury trial, possibly earlier this week. I wonder what it would take. It's not that, is it the Tom Cruise film? What's the Minority Report? Hasn't made me think differently about this. I just think, and forgive me for self-indulgence again, I kind of think I should be more frightened by this. I kind of don't feel the fear that I should fear. Part of it is Scott's fault. My friend Scott, who dealt with one of my early fears about this, which was, well, what if we introduce the technology and then we end up with a fascist government, which, according to the opinion polls, is quite a real possibility at the moment. What if we adopt this technology with a non-fascist government, although there's plenty of people who think that the current government has elements of fascism. I'm not one of them, but I acknowledge the existence of the people who do. What if we bring in this technology and then the fascists get into power and use it to track down people who, for example, say mean things about them? To which Scott's response was pretty irresistible, actually. He just said, look, if the fascists want that technology, then they'll bring it in when they get into power. It's not really an argument against doing it. You don't say, we better get rid of the army, because what if the fascists get in? And then they'll be using the army to attack our own people. Oh, hang on, that's reminded me. Simon Marks will be joining us at 11:45 to talk about the political situation and unfolding elements of the political situation in the United States of America. As I display every time we talk about AI or similar, I'm not as au fait with technological advances as I am with some of the other subjects that we discuss together. But I kind of think that this is a no-brainer. It's a biometric tool. The police are going to use it. They're going to be able to access the plethora, the proliferation of images that we have now but didn't have before. You will be able to, there's an app in Wales that allows officers to carry out real-time searches in the street of the database. What exactly is being infringed here? There is a perception that this is Big Brother watching, concedes Superintendent Ian Taylor, who's in charge of the facial recognition work. This is Big Brother watching, police gathering personal information, and that is not the case. I would say to the public, you have nothing to worry about. 1,300 arrests by the Metropolitan Police in the past 2 years using this technology. They found more than 100 registered sex offenders who were in breach of their license conditions. But still, only 6 forces use it routinely, while others borrow the equipment for specific purposes. The plan is to extend it to every police force in the country, including the British Transport Police. What am I supposed to be frightened of? I've asked you this before, and I will probably ask it you again, unless you bring the clincher to the table. What am I supposed to be frightened of? Because I think that we've dealt with the most urgent concern, which was what it might be used for in the future. I'm worried about now. What am I supposed to be worried about now? I think, and I usually find myself siding with civil liberties organisations or human rights organisations when it comes to state overreach, but I find myself wondering whether we are all being a little bit Luddite, whether we are a little bit like the widespread perception of King Canute on the beach Everybody thinks historically that he was trying to turn back the tide, but he wasn't. He was demonstrating to his nobles that he couldn't. He was reminding them that he was not divine, or at least he was not possessed of supernatural powers. Look, I am telling the tides to stop coming in, and they're still coming in, so stop treating me, said King Canute, as if I am all-powerful and I can make things happen that can't happen. It seems to me that the technology is a little bit like the tide on this one, and that you can sit there as a civil liberties organisation, or indeed as a worthy figure, and say, this is terrible, we must resist it, but the tide's going to come in anyway. Yeah, we've got doorbells now. I can now, literally, see whether there's anybody outside my house. I can pick up my phone. You know this. I'm not shocking you with any new information. I can pick up my phone now, press a couple of buttons, and I can see my garden path. I literally see it. So the idea that the police wouldn't be availing themselves of new technology as and when it becomes available seems to me to be a little bit bonkers. That is, and it's not 52-48 today, that is about 65% of my feeling at the moment, that resisting this is ridiculous. 35% of my feeling is a sense that there's something a little bit wrong. A sense that I should be worried, but I'm not quite sure what I should be worried about, and I want you to tell me. You are also, of course, welcome to join me in being cautiously welcoming of this technology. In the secure knowledge that I will never be a sex offender, the idea of being able to identify sex offenders who are in breach of their terms without any other fuss or rigmarole seems to me to be a wonderful thing. Or indeed, criminals who are on the lam, as I think the phrase used to be. People who've absconded. In a world where the Justice Secretary seems to be routinely revealing that prisoners have been released by accident, surely it's going to be a heck of a lot easier to find them and get them back into prison if we're deploying this facial technology. So, in a world where I can currently see the garden path outside my house from 4 or 5 miles away, what am I supposed to be worried about with regard to facial recognition technology? 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. I don't think it's one of those stories that is going to admit much personal experience. I know that some of the early iterations of it, some of the technology made people from ethnic minorities much more likely to be misidentified than people who weren't. And I'm not making light of that, but it would be something that was dealt with. And again, I fully appreciate that that's easy for me to say as someone who wouldn't be on the wrong end of it. But the technology is only going to improve. What are we supposed to be worried about? As the civil liberties organisations and sundry other people who I respect and admire queue up to tell us to be careful what we wish for, what is wrong with wishing for this? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need.
This is LBC.
Across the world, millions of people are living through conflict, forcing families to flee their homes. Sheila Fogarty spoke with Christian Aid CEO Patrick Watt about the decades-long conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
They forced 5 million people from their homes. They killed thousands. It needs people's attention because it's the world's biggest humanitarian crisis. We're asking members of the public in this country to respond to this appeal.
Listen back to the full interview on Global Player, thanks to Christian Aid, LBC.
Mate, did you know you could win £100 worth of points when you scan your BP Me Rewards card?
Yes.
And that can be spent on M&S or Amazon vouchers?
Yes.
Oh, what would I get? Oh, new shoes for Macy, socks for Dad, a scarf for Mum, bottle of red for
scan
me.
Your BP Me Rewards card with every purchase of BP and you could win £100 worth of points every hour. So, don't just scan, scan to win.
What would you get?
Fuel and earplugs.
Offer ends 2nd of January 2026. Participating stores only. T's and C's apply. For details, see bpmerewards.co.uk.
Get hosting sorted with Black Friday deals on the UK's best broadband technology.
Oh, yeah?
Keep the extra guests entertained this winter with EETV.
So I can watch all me crime dramas.
While the rest of us have the football on.
That's right. Switch up subscriptions with Netflix Now, TNT Sports, and Discovery Plus. All powered by EE's ultra-fast full fiber. Sign me up. Switch to our award-winning bundles today.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
And listen, if I didn't make this clear before, I'm sorry, but it's the philosophical challenge I'm interested in. The teething troubles with the technology notwithstanding, it's the philosophical challenge of the police needing to find me and being able to then access my passport photo or my driving license and use that photo to program a computer, which then employs a super camera to look at every face going past, and it will flash up when I turn up. So it's not, and again, I don't think the philosophical question of what we're supposed to be worried about today is answered by saying, oh, but what if this happens tomorrow? I'm going to be quite strict about this. It's not a database. The database exists. That's the point I missed in my introduction. I apologise. I was being a bit dopey. The database exists. There is already a database of our passport photos and driving licence photos, obviously. The police are not going to have unlimited and untrammelled access to that. They are going to be able to say, we are looking for James O'Brien. We don't have very good pictures of him. Can we access the database to find a couple? And the answer is yes, you can. And then they use those to find me if I happen to be running around in public. And I can't see anything wrong with that, philosophically. So the mythical future, the theoretical future, and the technological concerns are not currently clinching answers to the question that I'm asking. The reason why you should be worried about it is because of something other than the thing that you're talking about. Do you see what I mean? I don't think I'm being unduly strict. The area in which perhaps I'm being a little bit arrogant or indulging in white privilege is raised by Cab here in a couple of messages to Blue Sky. Of course you don't fear facial recognition. You have a middle-aged white man's face. How don't you get this? There's you and a young black bloke walking past the same crime scene in video footage. Who gets their collar felt by the institutionally racist Metropolitan Police? And I don't want to sound glib or dismissive, but that's not how it works, Cab. That they would have a picture of the, if they were looking for me or the young black bloke, they would have our pictures in the database and they would flash up in the event of us walking past. Now, certainly at one point and possibly still now, the likelihood of a false positive was higher for people with darker skin than it was for people with white skin. And I don't really get to say, oh, you've got nothing to worry about. They'll soon iron that out if they haven't already. So that is a valid objection, but it's one that I'm aware of. And it isn't quite the problem that you frame. It would be looking for somebody specific and finding the wrong person. And that's horrible, right? No one wants to have their collar felt unfairly. But as soon as they find the wrong person proves that they're not the right person. That's really easy to do. Someone comes along and puts their hand on the shoulder of a dark-skinned person who's been a victim of a false positive. I'm not for a minute suggesting that this is fun or negligible or easily dismissed, but they say, you know, John Doe, I'm arresting you on suspicion of, and you say, I'm not John Doe. And the copper says, yeah, they all say that. And you say, yeah, but here's my driving license, here's my passport. It'd be impossible to prove that that person was the person that they are not. And very easy to prove that that person is not the person that they are not. I think that closes down that line as well, but I could be wrong. Luke's in Bromley. Luke, what would you like to say?
Hi. Yes, like you, I feel like I should be concerned, but I'm kind of reassured that maybe it's a way of mopping up the streets of bad people.
It easier to find people that the police are trying to find, and who could be opposed to that?
Yeah, so assuming we've got nothing to hide, which obviously most of us haven't, I haven't, you haven't, I don't really have anything to hide. I mean, like you say, I've got technology as well, doorbell. I've got an Apple doorbell, actually, so it does facial recognition already and tells me who's at the door.
Does it? Oh, yours is better than mine.
Yeah, well, you probably went for a ring, but there's better ones.
Typical.
it'll tell you John Smith is at the door. It'll even let you read the name on the parcel and tell you if it's like FedEx or Amazon.
Good Lord.
So we've got the technology, and I just wonder if it's actually going to help us.
Is it a problem of selling? Is it actually the way that the conversation is packaged? And well, because, look, these are not stupid people. The director of Liberty says the government must halt the rapid rollout of facial recognition technology and make sure there are safeguards in place to protect each of us and prioritise our rights, something we know the public wants.
Yeah.
And I don't dispute what Akiko Hart says, but we're public, and we could quite easily have gone the other way on this, and we wouldn't really be able to explain why. What are we supposed to fear?
I think the best case study we've got with a lot of these questions you ask every day is look abroad and see how things are going abroad.
And how are they going abroad? you don't know. I thought you were about to tell me. I didn't realise you were just queuing that up rhetorically.
An extreme example would be China, obviously, yes, where they abuse it, you know. And I do feel like they've got credits and things, and you can't get on a bus if you're not green enough and stuff.
Yes, of course.
So we don't want to go down there. And my biggest thing that holds me is like freedom of speech. Now, my doorbell does not tell me, is it a Lib Dem or a Reform person yet?
It will. It'll recognise their rosettes if you asked it to, probably soon, if not now.
Well, my doorbell actually has the function of if someone's coughing, assuming they're thinking of perhaps some virus or something, I don't know.
Well, but, I think a lot of... I mean, I did stress in the outset that I am not technologically illiterate, but I am certainly by no stretch of the imagination up to date. And that's kind of the tide point I was making that Lucas just added to, this sense that it's all a little bit ridiculous to resist the unstoppable march of progress in this case, or nature in the case of King Canute. Big Brother Watch, which as far as I'm aware is no longer secretly funded. It used to be one of those, it was certainly in the same building at some point as some of the worst Tufton Street ghouls, but to the best of my knowledge it no longer is. So I will quote them on this occasion. Facial recognition surveillance is out of control. Live facial recognition could be the end of privacy as we know it. To which my question is how? How is it the end? Because the could be seems to me to be the category error. Oh, if it did this, this, this and this, then it would be the end of privacy as we know it. Therefore, it could be the end of privacy as we know it. But we're not discussing this, this, this and this. We're discussing that. And that is, the police are looking for me. The police are looking for you. They know your name. They know who you are. They just don't know where you are. So they access a database. They access your passport photograph and use that to program a supercomputer that will go off when you walk past one of their cameras. What is wrong with that? Because something must be. I'm with Luke. It feels like there must be something wrong with it. I don't know what it is. Bob's in Beverly, lovely part of the world. Bob, what would you like to say?
It's a lovely part of the world. Just a couple of things about future fascist government. I know you have made the point.
Go on.
Can I just have a go at it anyway? A future fascist government, yes, of course, could bring it in, but at that point, we could still object. We could still put things in
they're
the way
fascists.
Of doing it as people.
They're fascists. They don't care about your objections.
But future fascist government will have it in place already if we put it in place now, and so they won't even have to make the effort. We won't get to readdress it again.
But it's already in place, isn't it, really? It's just a question of whether or not they flick the switch. I mean,
well, that's an argument for no extremes at all, no red line. The other thing, I just wanted to say, present government, if they put this in place, it will address low-level crimes, typically. I know sex offenders is quite rightly an important issue.
Yes.
But for the most part, I mean, crime is, since 1995 is down by about 80%. It would have made a lot more sense at its peak.
How dare you share those facts and statistics? Because I love Twitter telling me that this is the least safe city in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that. It gets good hiding if I put that on Twitter.
Yeah, incredible.
Then present government. So they do this with CCTV and then they say, well, we don't need to invest anymore. We're doing this. It's all marvellous. And so we don't need to invest in police anymore. But it's still not going after the main criminals who are online now. Okay. So there's all sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, these aren't... I mean, here speaks, I think, a former copper, am I right?
Yeah.
Because, so I do worry about those points, but they are peripheral points. You're not addressing the philosophical conundrum at the heart of today's conversation. You're giving me what-ifs, aren't you?
Well, the future fascist government one, I think it would rob us of the opportunity there and then to see, well, this government, hell no, they're not going to...
Because they say that O'Brien bloke, we've managed to get him fired from LBC, but he's still slagging us off on social media. Yeah. We need to find him immediately.
Yeah, because James O'Brien brought in this vast plethora of new technology deliberately, we don't need to do it, so we're covered on that. But let's use it and abuse it. We don't get a chance to address them and to judge them as, hey, you're fascists, we're not going to have
you. Yeah, I mean, it is valid. It's why I mentioned it earlier, but it's not necessarily the deal-breaker that I used to think that it was. The idea of it being a touch of the Theresa Mays, you know, an excuse to get rid of police. That's a worry, actually. But again, is it a big enough worry to be opposed to the actual technology? I suppose if you were a criminal, it would make you less likely to join the Matrix, as it were. You possibly would think twice about having a passport or a driving license. But usually for most people, it would be too late by then. It's coming up to 11:30. Thank you, Bob. James in Glasgow's up next, first after the news. We've also got, of course, the unhinged headlines are back. They're creeping back, not quite with a vengeance, but slowly creeping back. Sadly, it's always the same journalist at the moment who is responsible for articles that appear under unhinged headlines. So no prizes at all for guessing who that is. Come on, guys. Up your game. Alistair Heath is running away with it at the moment. There've got to be some other mad right-wing frothers out there who want to give him at least a run for his money. And Simon Marks, who has been on manoeuvres lately, but it hasn't, of course, changed the fact that the Donald Trump administration is lurching from hideous to hideouser. And we'll have some of the latest examples of that for you before 1 o'clock today. And at 1 o'clock, of course, it is mystery. I've just noticed we got the first call in. That's flipped. 12 o'clock today, 12 o'clock. People already don't call in for mystery hour until 5 to. All right, 5 to 12. You call in before that, I may ban you from getting on this week's programme. I have, however, got some very, very exciting Mystery Hour-related news for you. I wonder if you can guess what it is. Well, Thomas Watts brings you the latest headlines.
Civil liberties groups have criticised Home Office plans to ramp up the use of live facial recognition by police. A public consultation is starting on how the controversial systems should be governed. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has ordered a review of the diagnosis of mental health conditions. He is said to be concerned about the sharp rise in the number of people with conditions like ADHD and autism on sickness benefit. A report into the death of a woman who was poisoned with a Russian nerve agent is due to be published. Dawn Sturgis was exposed to Novichok in Wiltshire in 2018, following the attempted murder of the former spy, Sergei Skripal. LBC weather, rain moving northeastwards across the country, brighter with showers in southern England, Wales and Northern Ireland. A high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
From 2007 to 2024, missold car finance may have cost drivers hundreds of pounds. You could be owed compensation, on average around £700 per agreement. Now, you could claim for free via your lender or the FCA's compensation scheme, or let Loxley Law handle your claim for you. Text LENDER to 64446 to start your agreement check and for T's and C's.
I've claimed. Have you?
Loxley Law. Text LENDER to 64446. Loxley Law is a trading style of RH Law Limited, authorised and regulated by the SRA. Fees are up to 36% of any successful claim.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of J.P. Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search J.P. Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Buzzing for the game this week. I want to hear what my mates are saying. I want to tell them they're delusional. I want to tell them who'll score first. I want to call the half-time score and the full-time score. And when our kid pipes up and says, want to bet? I'll stop. Think about it. Check my limits. Check how much I've played. And maybe I'll think, nah, not today, mate. Sometimes the best bet is the one you don't make. Gamble responsibly. Betfred. 18+. Gambleaware.org.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavoured fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 11:33 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Keith, I think we should do an unhinged headline. It's my favourite jingle. Is it? What's it called again? Not a jingle. What's it called? A stab. It's my favourite stab. Is it your favourite stab? I just like the... Listen, anyway.
Unhinged headline.
I got that right. It was a thumph, wasn't it? I do it again because I love it.
Unhinged headline.
Thumph. Starmer and Reeves.
Unhinged headline.
Starmer and Reeves now represent a major threat to British democracy. We should probably do the misinformation on the chess as well, because I don't think we can make this point often enough. This is from the, inevitably, the Daily Telegraph today. Starmer and Reeves now represent a major threat to British democracy. Oh, do you know what, though? To be kind, sometimes the headline can be unhinged, but the article beneath it can be quite measured and sensible. It doesn't happen very often, and the gulf is rarely enormous. But let's have a little look at the opening lines of this article to find out whether or not Alistair Heath is even more mad than usual, or actually, on this occasion, is at least demonstrating a patina of sanity. Let's start here. Labour lied to us. It deceived us. It sold itself on a false prospectus. It perverted every democratic norm to orchestrate one of the greatest political heists of all times, promising voters... Good Lord, no, that's certainly at least as unhinged as the headline above it. So, but Boris Johnson fan says what? Labour lied to us. It deceived us. It sold itself on false prospectus. Sorry, Brexiter says what? Labour lied to us. It deceived us. It sold itself on a false prospectus. Sorry, Liz Truss fanboy says what? Labour lied to us. It deceived us. You could almost feel the flecks of spittle landing on his keyboard from here. But I don't want to be too mean, because they've obviously turned down the heat a bit on unhinged headlines lately. I'm sure it's not linked in any way whatsoever to the fun that we have at their expense, and I'm very, very keen for them to turn the heat back up again. So don't tell anybody that we're doing unhinged headlines again. All right, keep it under your hat. But that is a doozy.
Unhinged headline.
James is in Glasgow. Facial recognition cameras. What are we actually supposed to be worried about? Well, you tell me.
I haven't got any worries, to be honest.
Where are all these people who do? Or is it just the case that we've either scared them away or they can't articulate what they're worried about any more than we can speculate what they're worried about?
I don't know. I think if it keeps anybody safe, or if it makes the police jobs easier, or if it takes more bad people off the streets, then I can't see a negative. I know there should be some, like you say, we should see something wrong with it, but I know I can't see any problems with it. And the only way the police would be looking for myself or for you is if you'd done something wrong, and then they'd have your pictures.
And if they collar us by accident, and again, I fully appreciate that this is more likely to happen to people of colour than it is to white people, but if they collar you by accident, it's quite easy to prove that you're not who they say you are.
Of course it is, yeah. You've got your driving licence there, it's not me. It's the same as if they were looking for someone with a red jumper. All right, you've got a red jumper on, they're going to pull you. But, you know, as soon as you pull your ID out, it's not me. They're going to say sorry for bothering you on your way. I don't see a problem with it.
It could be one of those stories that just seems to diminish in scale the longer it gets talked about. But I like both of these organisations. Well, I certainly like Liberty, and they are adamant that it is going to threaten us, and they're also adamant that the public wants safeguards in place to protect each of us and prioritise our rights. They're not actually calling for it to be abolished altogether. They're just objecting, as far as I can tell, to the rapidity of the rollout. But what is it precisely that I'm supposed to be worried about? Speaking of which, the phone-in we had about Rachel Reeves last week was about what it was she is alleged to have lied about. And of course, the claim that she'd lied about productivity was rubbished. It was completely dismantled by facts, but also by the representative of the OBR speaking to the Select Committee earlier this week. The accusation can lay against her is that she omitted information, so that when she was talking about downgraded productivity, she didn't add that the tax take had been enhanced by inflation, and therefore we had two things going on. We had a downgrade in productivity and an unexpected uptick in taxation. But she didn't lie. You can talk about a lie by omission, is that she should have told us the other bit as well, but all of the people that were calling her a liar were liars. or just people making mistakes. I don't know what word you would use to describe this character who came forward yesterday or the day before to complain that Rachel Reeves was describing herself as a British junior girls chess champion, because all she'd actually done was win a British junior girls chess championship. I'm going to say those words again. This character, Professor Alex Edmonds, was fated by ludicrously biased right-wing media, having come forward with a claim that Rachel Reeves had no right to call herself a British junior girls chess champion, because all she'd actually done was win, and I'm going to get this absolutely right, the British Women's Chess Association girls chess championship. Can you riddle that one, yeah, for me? So she won the British Women's Chess Association Girls Chess Championship, under-14s, but she shouldn't be allowed to describe herself as a British under-14s girls champion because she won the British Women's Chess Association under-14s Girls Chess Championship. He was arguing some bilge about the idea that you should only be able to call yourself... You see, they use the words here, a chess champion versus the chess champion. You have to enter the British championship that's not just for girls in order to be the girls' chess championship. You have to enter the mixed gender championship, and the highest ranking girl in that is the girls' chess champion, not the person who won the girls' chess championship run by a different organisation. So to be sitting in a newsroom at the weekend or early this week and thinking, is this a story? And to be answering yes, definitely, is a mark of madness beyond even the realms of the unhinged headline. So Rachel Reeves, for the avoidance of doubt, categorically did win a girls-only tournament run by the British Women's Chess Association. She won it. But she's not allowed to call herself a British junior chess champion. Girls. Because some bloke... And, of course, because it's Rachel Reeves and the entire right-wing media is suffering from a very horrible case of racial prejudice, ba-boom, tsh, I'm here all week, try the veal, that actually ended up in newspapers and on radio stations, that story, about her winning, literally winning, an under-14 girls' chess championship, but lying about winning an under-14 girls' chess championship. Happy days. We haven't even got a stink. Yes, we have. It's a missed information.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. I don't even know that there's anything to add to that conversation except to ask all the people that joined in what on earth they think they were playing at. And the question of what on earth they think they're playing at, what am I supposed to be frightened of with regard to facial recognition technology? Neil is in South Hams. Neil, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I can tell you you're about 15 years behind the curve on this.
You're telling me. What are we talking about specifically?
So, the facial recognition software you're talking about, yeah. Okay, I know for an absolute fact that a global tech company have been producing this and been working on this for 15 years for the UK government. I know that for an absolute fact because I know people that are working on it.
And also, I think, I sense, also because you do your own research on the internet.
Am I right? I work in the tech sector, so I don't fall down rabbit holes that easy when it comes to tech.
Nobody in the world thinks that they fall down rabbit holes easily.
This is true. What I would say is, I would be concerned about it.
Why?
Principally because
yes.
There is mixed messaging coming from the police, government, and so on and so forth. So, for example, this morning on Nick's show, I caught a little bit where a police commissioner said the data would be held for days, weeks, whatever they said. But the chief inspector said the data would be held for, and I quote, milliseconds. It cannot be both. It just can't be both.
Well, if they're referring to different data, it can. I didn't hear the juxtaposition that you referred to, but I imagine it's quite easily ironed out. The data is held for as long as they're looking for the person.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and then they find the person. It might take milliseconds, or it might take weeks. And once they found the person, they don't hold the data anymore.
If you're walking down the street...
And the data's held elsewhere, isn't it? I mean, it's not as if they're going to they're going to blow up the passport office and all our pictures with it. So the data is held. It's just the question of who is currently holding it.
So here's the fundamental problem you have with it, is the access of that data.
Yeah.
Okay.
To be clear, that's the fundamental problem you have with it.
Okay. Well.
Why?
So, you know, during COVID, Ipsos Mori was given access to the NHS database. So, and they used that under GDPR because it was a national emergency, for want of a better term.
Yeah. So, what did they do with it?
Well, I know they have contacted me outside of COVID.
Yeah, but what did they do with the access?
They contacted people for the survey during COVID. Yeah. They have since contacted people after COVID, after the use of that data was accessed. So yeah, they have scraped the NHS database and they've taken that data. So what?
Forgive me, I'm not being glib. I mean, Ipsos Mori were keen to canvas experiences during COVID, and they have subsequently,
you're okay with a private company having access to the NHS database? You're comfortable with that?
Access to my name and address and the fact that I've been diagnosed with COVID.
Right.
But, yeah, I am quite comfortable with that. I mean, all of the people that made the vaccines were private companies, mate.
Yeah, but the people that made the vaccines weren't given access to the NHS database.
But you keep saying the words NHS database. What I mean, they don't know whether my tonsils were taken out when I was a child. They simply have access.
How do you know that?
Well, because
we don't know that.
We don't know anything. All we know is what they tell us, and this is where we have to question your confidence that you don't get lured down rabbit holes, because you're now believing. Why do they want access?
I know, but
we're talking about facial recognition cameras.
Yeah.
And you're talking about COVID already.
I'm going back to the messaging of one...
What about ANPR? Because you hop around on COVID. I'm going to hop to automatic number plate recognition. That's there now, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's out there.
Okay, so ANPR doesn't tell the police who is driving that car. It tells the police whether that car is taxed, insured, and is wanted for any outstanding.
Yeah, but it gives them a fairly reliable indication of who's driving it, doesn't it?
I could be driving your car. That's why I said fairly reliable, mate.
Either it's been driven illegally or it's been driven by the person that's allowed to drive it, who the police are currently looking for. So either way, they've got a... Of course it's your personal data. It's your car.
No, it isn't. Okay. And how is... It tells them, the registered owner of the car...
I'm not feeling it, Neil. I can sense that you're really worried about this stuff, but...
I'm not overly worried about it.
You sound pretty worried, mate.
What I'm questioning is how long they're holding the data for, because at the moment they can't get a coherent message together.
Well, hang on, you're basing that on Nick's show.
On a chief constable and a...
Yeah, but it can be a very nerve-wracking experience appearing on a radio programme. Can I make a suggestion? And I think we can part as friends after that.
Yeah.
Do you think you're more important than I think I am?
No.
Well, because I'm not really worried by the things that you describe. I mean, circumstances in which I'd be...
Educate people about it, though, or give a point of view.
It's not educated. If you come on a show and say, I know things for certain that I can't prove, that's not educating people. That's frightening them. That's the realm of the conspiracy theorist. And I'm sure you didn't mean to do that, but that's exactly what you did. So I always remember, I just don't think that I'm that interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think I'm that interesting either.
So what are we supposed to be worried about? Becoming more interesting to the authorities?
Well, yeah, maybe. But you have to consider the goalpost potentially moving.
Yeah, except we're talking very specifically about the goalpost not moving, aren't we? We're examining the wisdom or otherwise of these goalposts here staying exactly where they are. I understand the fears of things that are not happening. I could be frightened of lots of things.
Right to privacy? That, I guess, is the ultimate question.
Well, from whom?
Do you feel you should have a right to privacy?
Privacy from whom?
Well, from anybody.
Not if I'm committing crimes. Of course
didn't
not.
Didn't say about committing crimes.
But that's all they're going to be looking for, under the goalposts where they are now.
Where they are now.
Yeah, and that's all we're talking about. So in the context of where the goalposts are now, is there anything to worry about?
I wouldn't say worry, I would say concern.
Yeah, what?
Because I would like my data to remain my data.
But it will, unless the police are looking for you.
or unless a third party gets access.
You've done it again. You've moved the goalposts.
No, I haven't moved the goalposts.
You have moved the goalposts. You've just introduced something that's not actually happening.
You can tell me no third-party private companies can be involved in this.
No, I'm going to tell you that they are not currently scraping your data.
Well,
I'm getting quite a lot of complaints, actually, so I should address those. Apparently, I'm much more interesting than I allow. Have a great day, Neil. Bye, there you go. It's 11:48.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
West Streeting ordering this independent review. Now, normally I'm rather cynical of these, but in this one, if they get it right, well, it could be a game changer. He's coming at it as an attempt to cut welfare spending. He wants to look at why there's such a sharp rise in diagnoses of, as I say, autism, ADHD, mental illness. Is provision too easy? Are people getting money for conditions they don't need? Well, I need to hear from you. Andrew in Prince's Risborough.
We are attempting to diagnose every little quirk of personality and label it.
Dave in Chisholm.
I was diagnosed with ADHD, borderline schizophrenia, and a mild form of autism when I was 4 years old. I've had an amazing career. I've proved everyone wrong.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Laithwaite's, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia. And we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Waitrose presents 3 for 2 on chilled party food.
Kelly, meet everyone.
Hi, nice to meet you.
8 guests, 1 host who knows exactly what will bring them together.
Food's ready.
Starring number one king prawn toasts with crispy sesame seeds, soft polar bear bao buns bursting with hoisin veg filling and meltingly tender Wagyu beef mini pies.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines of stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and concessions. Cheapest item free.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
11:51 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know when this happened. I hope it's not a mark of maturity or a professionalisation of this programme. Perish the thought. But I keep running out of time to do everything that I promised to do. I've got 2 Woke Watches left over from yesterday. I don't know that I'm going to be able to deliver the answer to the Nigel Farage multiple choice on which racist trope he's trying to resurrect today. Could be all of them, of course, but on this occasion it isn't. And it's Simon Marks now, which always takes up more time than I intended because he's so blooming interesting. What are we going to do? And then it's Mystery Hour, and we never interrupt Mystery Hour for anything. And not even Simon Marks, I don't think, has ever interrupted Mystery Hour. Shall we start? I think that the Trump administration, with regard to Somalian people, we've reached the potential pogrom stage, have we?
Well, we've reached the stage of rounding people up and throwing them out. I mean, there's no question about that. And I think we have reached, James, a new stage in President Trump's administration. I mean, you will remember that about 10 or 11 days ago, he was in the Oval Office for that extraordinary meeting with Zoran Mamdani, the Democrat socialist who's about to become mayor of New York when the new year gets underway. And we all thought this was going to be a real slanging match, and it turned out to be a bit of a bromance that developed between the two of them. And when Zoran Mamdani was asked by a reporter if he still stood by his description of Donald Trump as a fascist, Mamdani started twisting in the wind a little bit, and Trump turned to him and said, no, it's okay. You can, it's fine. You can call me a fascist. You know, that's absolutely fine. I mean, here we are now, I think it's 13 days later from that encounter, and we are at the end of a week in which Donald Trump, I think, certainly on the issue of these Somalis, 63,000 of them living legally in Minnesota.
Legally living in Minnesota.
Yeah. Absolutely. But now all being told that their status, along with the status of people from 19 other countries here, is going to be re-examined if they are permanent legal residents of the United States with those coveted green cards. They have today here absolutely terminated, basically put a complete freeze on all applications for U.S. citizenship, even people who had already been told that their applications had been approved and they had a date in the diary for naturalization ceremonies from those 19 countries. They're being told, don't even think of showing up for the citizenship ceremony because there's a total freeze on your application. So, but this attack on Somalis particularly has been so ugly and so racially driven, so racist in the bigotry that President Trump has expressed over the last several days at the White House, that I think it's taken us into a new phase here.
That's why I reached for the P word, because I heard him say the phrase, I don't want them here. And he said that irregardless of their immigration status. I mean, technically, he could even be speaking about people who had been born in the United States of America to Somali parents. And that phrase, I don't want them here, is as close as I can remember anybody in the civilized world ever coming to the rhetoric of 1930s Germany.
Well, he called them garbage. He said their country stinks, which has come as something of a surprise to the authorities in Somalia, who have viewed themselves as being a very crucial ally of the United States in the war against Islamic fundamentalist terrorism in the region. But what we're seeing in Minnesota, the Department of Homeland Security, as ever, immediately snapped to attention. Thousands of additional agents being flooded there to begin an operation to start rounding Somalis up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and in other towns and cities all over the state. And again, of course, this is all happening in flagrant violation of the wishes of the Democrats who actually run Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Minnesota more broadly. But, beyond anything else, I think the language that President Trump has used in the White House this week to describe a community of people in the United States from Somalia, some of whom, as you say, may well have been born in the United States, has been the darkest, ugliest language we've ever heard from any president of the United States about any community of residency.
And then from language to behavior, because the sort of breach of norms with regards to these boats that are being blown up in the ocean is, I mean, it's actually quite hard to fully relate, isn't it? But I'm going to ask you to.
Yeah, and it's not just a breach of norms, of course. It's pretty clear, unambiguous, that this is a breach of international law and maritime law that the United States has been engaged in. More than 20 boats that we know of, because who knows how many they haven't told us about, have been blown out of the water as a result of U.S. airstrikes and other military action on the high seas. You have to take it on trust from the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, that these boats were were indeed carrying narcotics and bringing them to American shores, even though Coast Guard statistics show that of the hundreds of vessels that have been interdicted on the high seas, that haven't been blown out of the water, 25% of them were found to be carrying no narcotics. So if you take that 1 in 4 percentage and apply it to the 20 boats that have been blown out of the water, and again, we have no proof at all to demonstrate that they were actually carrying narcotics to American shores, you know, it's a reasonable bet to assume that at least 5 of those boats were not carrying any illicit cargo. It's a big day here today, though, because Admiral Mitch Bradley is going to be testifying behind closed doors on Capitol Hill about the strike in September on one of those vessels, in which it has been reported here by the Washington Post that Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, directed Admiral Bradley to kill, in a second strike, 2 survivors of the first attack that could be seen clinging to the wreckage and trying to get back into what was left of the vessel. And the Secretary of War has denied that he was the man who gave the order. It was Admiral Bradley's operation. So he's thrown the Admiral under the bus. Donald Trump has sounded pretty iffy on all of this, said he didn't want a second strike to have been conducted if it was. And there's no question that that activity would have been, if it took place, a breach of international law. So there's tremendous interest here in what Admiral Bradley says today behind closed doors about the orders that he was given by Pete Hegseth, the former Fox News breakfast host, who extraordinarily is now in charge of 2 million men and women in uniform at the Pentagon.
Very, very insulting also of the Washington Post journalist who broke this story, despite the fact I think that one of them has a military record that makes Pete Hegseth look ridiculous.
Yes, and of course, despite the fact that the Pentagon press area has been flushed completely of what the administration would refer to as legacy journalists, those offices where journalists for all sorts of media houses used to sit are now occupied by a range of pro-Trump propagandists, including even Laura Loomer, the far-right influencer who now appears to have a Pentagon press badge, because they've all agreed to sign restrictions on journalistic activities at the Pentagon that every single media house, including Fox News here, refused to sign, so they were all thrown out of the building. The New York Times, within the last hour or so, it's been announced here, is now suing the Pentagon, arguing that those restrictions on journalists that Pete Hegseth ordered are unconstitutional.
Very briefly, Simon, because I'm already late for the news. Is there a sense? I've read some slightly more upbeat reporting, which seems odd against the backdrop of what you've described, but is there a sense that some things may be slightly spiralling out of Trump's control at the moment?
Well, I think there's no question that MAGA is spiraling out of Donald Trump's control. I mean, the Make America Greater Movement Again movement that he created clearly is beginning to question his efficacy in office. And you've got figures like Marjorie Taylor Greene out there who have broken with him, leaving Congress. She could be very dangerous to him outside the tent as opposed to inside it. And the economy, I mean, you know, he's now calling affordability and people's concern about prices in supermarkets here as we head towards Christmas a Democratic Party hoax. I mean, you go to the supermarket, you pay your money, you see what's going on with prices here. It's not a Democratic Party hoax.
Simon, thank you. There is more that we could touch upon, but we are defeated by the time, including the extraordinary spectacle of senior members of his administration queuing up to essentially describe him as a cross between Santa Claus and the Second Coming. But we are, as I say, defeated by the time. Simon Marks live from Washington, D.C. Mystery Hour next. Book your place early if you can. 0345 606 0973. The time now is 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a report has found an unaccountable number of people were put at risk by the astonishingly reckless Salisbury nerve agent poisonings. The inquiry looked at the death of Dawn Sturgis, who was exposed to Novichok following the attempted murder of the former spy Sergei Skripal in 2018. LBC's Joseph Draper has been looking at the findings. They've been released in the last few minutes.
The attack in Salisbury in 2018, which left mother of three Dawn Sturgis dead, showed no regard for human life and risked killing an unaccountable number of innocent people, the report found. Russian assassins were working under orders from President Putin to kill Russian dissident Sergei Skripal, who was living in Salisbury at the time. It was carried out with considerable determination and meant as a demonstration of Russian power. They then threw away a perfume bottle filled with enough poison to kill thousands of people, and it was picked up by Charlie Rowley and taken home as a gift to his partner, Miss Sturgis.
Britain and Norway have signed a defence pact to counter Russian submarine activity. The deal, combining warship patrols, is aimed at protecting critical undersea cables in the North Atlantic. Police could use the passport database as part of an expansion of facial recognition technology. Ministers want more forces to use the systems, but civil liberties campaigners say it risks creating a surveillance state. The number of people in hospital with flu in England is at a record level for this time of year. An average of just over 1,700 flu patients were in beds in England every day last week, up 56% on the same point in 2024. Health experts say the system is struggling under rising infection levels and industrial action. The energy regulator Ofgem has approved plans to spend £28 billion on network upgrades. Household bills will go up by £108 by 2031 as a result, but the watchdog says it will deliver long-term savings. The government says the plans are essential to avoid power costs spiralling. And Joe Root has made his first century in Australia as England closed the first day of the second Ashes test in Brisbane on 325 for 9. He is on 135 not out. Zach Crawley also made 50, but four batsmen fell without scoring. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 97.11. That's up 19 points. The pound buys $1.33. And a Euro 14. LBC weather this afternoon's rain continuing to move northeastwards across the UK, brighter with showers in southern England, Wales and Northern Ireland. A high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. You can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyds today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, 5 minutes after 12 is the time. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. I can say that in my sleep, I think, now. It's been tripping off the tongue so winningly. And I bet Reese can as well. Reese has been in touch with a message that begins, "Very sad of me, but I had this from Spotify." I'll share with you in a moment what it was that Reese received from Spotify, and you can decide whether or not it is indeed very sad of him. I don't think so at all. I think it makes Reese one of life's winners. More details to come. If you're not familiar with this feature, if that's the correct phrase to describe it, the correct word to describe it, then I think you're in for a bit of a treat and a surprise. Very different from the other 14 hours of the week that we can spend together, but it works on a fairly straightforward premise. Someone rings in with a question, a riddle, a mystery, a conundrum, and somebody else rings in with the answer. Somehow, between those two polls, the magic happens. But in order to ring in with a question or an answer, you need the number. And the number is 0345 6060 973. Speaking of numbers, Reese is in the top 0.5% of Mystery Hour listeners on Spotify. It goes up every week as a self-contained little podcast on Spotify. I presume that that is the top cohort. It doesn't go higher than 0.5%, does it? Mine, I'm in the top 1% of people this year. And I always worry when a relatively hip young band appears on my radar, I always worry that I do them a disservice as a 53-year-old gob on a stick by revealing that I'm a huge fan of them. I can't imagine that they kind of welcome and relish that. Maybe if it was Chris Moyles or Johnny Vaughan or somebody else of a similar vintage to me, but rather more street credibility. Then they, and of course they play music on their radio programs on Radio X, but I always worry, but I am currently in, according to Spotify Wrapped this year, the top 1% of Wonder Horse listeners. And indeed their latest album is the album I listened to most last year, apart from a Johann Sebastian Bach album. I am nothing if not eclectic. So, 1% on Wonder Horse, but Reese is in the top 0.5% of, James O'Brien's Mystery Hour listeners. Does it go any higher than 0.5%? Is anybody getting the 0.1%? I doubt it. I think Reese is it. So how many minutes of Mystery Hour do you think Reese listened to get into the top 0.5% of Mystery Hour listeners? And the answer is, I was going to do a competition, but it'd be ridiculous. The answer is 25,715 minutes. Isn't that extraordinary? Well done, Reese. And frankly, why is everybody else lagging behind? It's there for you. The archive is available on the Global Player, on the LBC app, on Spotify, should you so desire. But there it is. 25,715 minutes of Mystery. Apparently it goes up to 0.01%. Before the end of this hour, but if you're listening to the podcast, you won't be listening live, will you? Not if you've listened to 25,715 minutes of it. How come Reese was tuning in today? I want to find someone in the 0.01%. I recorded a video, but I can't remember who for. I got a little video off one of the members of Wonder Horse today. If you are in the sort of top tier of fans of a band or an outfit, or indeed a podcaster, you get a little video sent to you saying, "Hey, thanks for listening. We loves ya." I think I was a little bit more enthusiastic than the lad out of Wonder Horse who popped up in my inbox this morning, but probably not very. I can't remember which of the podcasts that was for. Was it for Full Disclosure? Was it for the Mystery Hour? Was it for the Whole Show podcast? Or was it for the James O'Brien Daily? I think it was probably for Full Disclosure. Keith answers A to everything now, which is a little odd because I think he's saying A as if he doesn't understand the question, which is also possible. So I think it was for Full Disclosure. So if you're in the top, what is it, 5% of Full Disclosure listeners, you got a little message from me. Anyway, all of this is of absolutely no interest whatsoever to the massive majority of people listening to this programme who are never going to clock up 25,715 listening minutes in the course of a single year. Two phone lines free. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. The new game is here. It's arrived in the UK, but it's not currently. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. Steve's in Crawley. Steve, question or answer?
That'd be very silly if I said answer, wouldn't it? Because you haven't got any questions yet.
Yeah, well, this is true. There's another riddle. There's another mystery for the ages.
Anyway, sorry, yes. I want to know, very, very simple question. I'm hitting the big 7-0 next year, and I want to know why I'm losing hair everywhere I want it, but it's coming out everywhere I don't want it.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? I think we've had it before, but that's not a criticism.
I think you might have done, but I can't remember it.
We gave up years ago trying to police repetition. Yeah. So you're talking, for the avoidance of doubt and for the terrifying of younger men listening, you're talking about your ears?
Ears.
Nose.
Yeah, ears, nose.
Shoulders.
Shoulders. It's coming out a lot more on my shoulders and back than it ever
knees
did
and toes.
Before. That's it. My wonderful 8-year-old granddaughter
heads.
Commented on it the other day, and I thought, thanks very much for that, Paige.
Shoulders, knees, and toes. Knees and toes.
One.
So, well, I mean, it's not fair. It's a grave injustice, and it's
absolutely
very, very true. You have to start. Do you remember the first time you were in the hairdressers, and they said, would you like me to do your ears?
No, because I've done my own hair for you, because I've got so little, I just run the mower over it.
Well, so long ago, for me, I remember the first time I was probably in my late 20s, early 30s, would you want me to do your ears? I said, what are you going to do to my ears?
And those people have the wax stuck up their nose and have that
trim.
Pulled out. My God.
Yeah,
no,
all right, you're on. Why? Jeez. I mean, biologically, what on earth is the reason, or evolutionarily, or scientifically, why on earth do we grow hair where we don't want it at roughly the same point in our life where we start losing hair where we do want it? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. I knew this would happen. Wonder Horse fans furious with me for anointing that band as dad rock. They're not dad rock, Richard. They're just one dad. I'm one dad who happens to listen to them. I've got teenage children who introduced me to it. But if there's a better song out there at the moment than Teal, then I do not know, then I haven't heard it. Remember, as we bid farewell to Steve, it frees up a phone line for you if you've been trying and struggling and failing even to get through. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need. Claire is in Ipswich. Claire, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Claire.
So, this is a bit long-winded. You might be able to help me somewhere.
Have you forgotten who you're talking to, Claire? Go on.
Okay, so, how distantly do you have to be related to someone to be able to say you carry none of their genetic influence? Would you like the backstory on this?
Well, I have to now, don't I? It'd be so rude of me to say no, definitely not, go away.
Well, a good friend of mine, Neil, did my family tree and he's very experienced at it. And when he showed me the family tree, he'd put a post-it over one corner of it and said he debated a lot whether to tell me whose surname was under there. Mm. And I'm ashamed to say it was Farage.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you poor thing. I thought it was going to be Fred West or someone like that.
No, it's even worse.
You said that, not me. Go on.
So, he very kindly gave me the chance not to know, but of course.
Oh, you had to tear off.
Now.
Yeah, you tore off the plaster.
So, yeah, my great-great-great-grandmother was the youngest sister in a Farage family, and the Farage name appears...
And it's him, it's definitely him.
Well, yes, the people that appear in my family tree as Farages,
yeah,
Neil has traced back to...
So would you have, if we did DNA tests on both of you, is what you're asking, really... Would a great 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 a shared great 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 be enough to flash up a genetic link?
Yeah, I want some reassurance that.
And what if you don't get any? I mean, you've not learned from your last offer of being able to remain in blissful ignorance, have you? This could go horribly wrong.
After the initial shock, I've found it quite amusing, and it's made quite a story. But I'm genuinely interested.
When does a measurable genetic link to a shared ancestor disappear from our own DNA?
Yeah, that's a much better question.
Well, it's the same question. I've just tarted it up a bit.
Yeah.
Is there a helpline for anybody who's in the same position as you? There's another Neil who asked that question, unless it's the same Neil, doubling down on his contribution to the gaiety of the nation. Thank you, Claire. Good Lord. That's another reason never to go down that particular route. Who was I talking to about it the other day on genetics? And people... Oh, it's a mate of mine who's discovered that his dad... he's discovered extra siblings. Siblings galore, almost, actually. It turns out his dad, they knew he was a bit of a rogue, but they didn't know quite how much of a rogue he was. And it's all gone rather well. It's all gone rather nicely. But a lot of it comes as a consequence of not doing the family tree, but of doing the genealogy tests. It's probably a phoning in that soon. We haven't done it for years, have we? But be careful. Beware of that stuff, because you never know what you might find, although hopefully it won't be quite as unpleasant a discovery as Claire's. 12:15 is the time. Two questions for you. Why do we, particularly men, grow hair where we don't want it at around the same time in our lives as we start to lose hair where we do want it? I want a scientific answer to that. And if you have a shared ancestor with someone, how many generations down would a DNA test generally, like a bog standard DNA test, I'm sure that, you know, the more sophisticated the test, then the further back you would go. But generally speaking, how many generations down would you go from a shared ancestor before there was no immediately obvious DNA genetic link between you? And if we get an answer to that one, Claire's delightful giggle notwithstanding, if we get an answer to that one, I will give you the money myself. It's 12:16.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
We all want to live well and age well. That means having independence and positive choices to enjoy the life you choose. That's what Thrive Living at Botanical Place in West Byfleet is all about. A place of fun, a friendship, in a hive of activity. But above all, it's a supportive community that puts your independence and well-being first.
With offers available on apartments to buy and rent, visit the marketing suite or book an appointment at botanicalplace.co.uk.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 60 60 973.
12:17 is the time. I'm currently not live on TikTok, but I will be. Obviously, I will be, but when? You know? That's not a Mystery Hour question, by the way, but I will let you know when we have worked out how to access our own TikTok account. Should I have said that out loud? I don't know, but I have now. Anyway, hair and genetics. Are the questions on the board at the moment? Let's get some more. Polly is in Northampton. Polly, question or answer?
Hi, James. Hello. A question, please.
Carry on.
Hi. So we've just had a baby. She's 10 weeks old.
No, we did not. And I've never met you.
James, wicked boy. I've just had a baby. She's 10 weeks. And we obviously shush her quite a lot. So yes. Get off to sleep.
In a nice way. I mean, you mean like a
in a nice way.
Not like a shush.
Yeah, gentle shushing.
You've got the other one to look forward to.
Exactly. And so we'll shush her quite a lot. We even have a playlist on Spotify, which plays shushing noises. And I suppose my question was, what is the science behind shushing and white noise? Why does it work for her?
I think, and I don't know that I'm going to take a round of applause for this, but I think that it replicates the sound in the womb.
Yeah, there are womb sounds that you can put on as well.
Are they not quite similar? Are they not quite whooshy?
It's sort of like a heartbeat. Yeah, it's like a heartbeat and like a whooshing sound, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's like the whooshing sound is what you hear when you're in the womb. Like, I mean, obviously the heart. I think it's that. I'm not going to take a round of applause because we'll get someone rather more qualified than me. And it might be something else. But it's very, very soothing. And some people never grow out of it. I have some very old things filed away in my brain, Polly. And some of them turn out not to have ever happened at all and not to be true at all. But I think that Wayne Rooney finds it hard to fall asleep unless he's got a Hoover on somewhere in the building.
Right. Yeah, see, I would hate that. Why does it work for some people and not others?
Well, exactly. Why does it work for some people and not others might be rather harder to answer. But for a tiny baby, it's going to be because you've only relatively recently quit the womb. It probably works on all tiny babies, but most of us grow out of it as time passes. I'll find out for you. How are you getting on, by the way? How's she sleeping?
Yeah, it's going much better. She only woke once last night, which was wonderful.
It's a win. Sensation. No wonder you can listen to the show today. Thank you. Eleanor is sometimes asking questions herself. I don't know if you're allowed to. You have to ring in if you want to get a question on Mystery Hour, but she wants to know, can Wayne Rooney just play a Hoover sound rather than have an actual Hoover on? How would I know the answer to that question, Eleanor? How would I know the answer to that? I mean, A, I'm trying to present a radio program here, and your job is to help me do that. And B, how would I know whether Wayne Rooney can just play a thing rather than... That next time I see him, I'll ask him. I promise. Martin is in Wembley. Martin, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I just wanted to say I've been listening to you for years, and you've helped me overcome my stammer, so thank you.
How did I do that?
Just by listening to
mate, what a lovely thing to hear. Gosh.
So there were certain words or phrases that I couldn't say, and then listening to you using words that you would use and phrases has helped me overcome my stammer. So I just want to say thank you for that.
I'm getting a bit emotional here, man. What a lovely thing to hear. Where do I send the invoice? Go on. Question or answer?
Right, question is, I was walking home with my daughter yesterday from tutoring, and we were looking up at the moon because it was quite bright.
It was, wasn't it?
Full moon is cool. And as the clouds broke around it, you could see the outline of a rainbow.
Yeah.
And she asked me, why is there a rainbow at nighttime over the moon? And I said to her, I have no idea. And usually, you know, as a dad, you go, oh, yeah, it's this, it's that.
I'm a bit of an expert, as Daddy Pig would say.
but I said, oh, I know someone that will probably know.
Well, I don't know.
But I had no idea. I'd never seen it, and it was literally for like a split couple of seconds.
And you both saw it?
We both saw it. I took a picture, but the picture doesn't do it justice.
Wouldn't come out. So what exactly is the question then?
Why was there the outline? So why was there a rainbow around the moon?
My first thought is it probably wasn't around the moon, but the way that where you were standing and looking, the rainbow was quite far in front of the moon. It's a bit like the cow in Father Ted, isn't it?
Yeah. But it was also because it was dark.
How dark? It was dusk, was it? About 4 o'clock?
Oh, this was about 5:30.
Oh, okay. So it was such a bright moon and you could see a rainbow around the moon where there's no atmosphere on the moon. So it can't have been a rainbow because there wouldn't be any water there, would there? I've veered now into territory I'm supremely unqualified to explore. Can we dump that last bit? Is that out there now forever? Okay, great.
But I'd never seen anything like it.
Let's try and find it. How come Martin and his daughter, do you want to tell me your daughter's name in case she listens back later on? You don't have to, in case it makes it exciting for her.
No, it's Maisie.
Oh, Martin and Maisie. Sounds like a sort of children's book waiting to be written, doesn't it? How come Martin and Maisie saw a rainbow over the moon last night? 0345. There we go. That's the question, right?
Thank you, James. That's it.
I love it. 03, and thank you for that. It's a wonderful thing to hear. Thank you for taking the time to let me know. I know there's nothing I can do about it, is there? Or try harder to help more people deal with their stammer in the future. I'll just keep on burbling. And what a lovely thing. Thank you. We are now live on TikTok, I'm delighted to tell you. So make sure that you do that thing, but also the other thing that TikTokers do. What is it again? Press the screen. Hit like. You don't say hit like, do you? You just put double tap something and also the other thing. Subscribe. Subscribe to what? LBC's Twitter at TikTok account. Yeah, but then you could get all sorts of characters popping up in your feed if you do that. Absolutely fine to do that immediately. I don't have really a tick. I think I've got one somewhere, but I'm never on it. Anyway, it's live now on TikTok, seriously. Nicola's in Exeter. Nicola, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on, Nicola.
So my daughter's just had her ears pierced and I need to change the earrings. And I was just wondering, why do different piercing holes react to different metals? So I've got my ear pierced like 3 times, but my middle hole can't have like gold or silver in. It's got to have something really cheap, but then another one has to have silver in, and I can't wear anything cheap, and I just wondering why that was.
What happens if you wear the wrong ones?
It just gives like bright red, just gets really hot. Just got to get the earring out.
How remarkable! Have you tried this? Have you checked this with other people?
Yeah, I think it happens to my mum as well. She's like, "Oh, I can only wear silver in my second half."
I don't know why you're giggling. Where in the ear are the holes?
Just, you know, normal lobe.
All in the lobe. They're all lobe-based holes. They're not all in the tragus, or because my girls are trying to get piercings in every bit of their ear at the moment. You've got that to look forward to, I imagine. It seems to be true.
Yeah, she's only 10.
It seems to be very fashionable. So they're all in the lobe. 3 in a lobe. One in the middle can't take. It's a bit like Jack Spratt and his wife. One can eat no fat and one can eat no lean.
Exactly.
So precious metal there, non-precious metal there, and all in the same lobe, the same sort of fleshy flap, if you pardon the expression. I have no idea. And your mum's the same. It might just be the two of you.
Yeah, but then, so my daughter's just had hers pierced, and I was thinking, what shall I put in? Shall I just, you know, because she's had titanium, it's, you know, very often. So I was thinking, do I need to get silver? And I thought, actually, why is this? And I thought, I need the guy to call.
Well, you say that. You know the show to call. It's very rarely me that gets a question correct if it's actually complicated, difficult, or in any way related to science. So we will try and find out for you, Nicola. A lovely, lovely question. So rainbows and ears. white noise and family trees and old Steve's body hair. Thank you, Nicola. Lewis in Putney is here. I tell you what, Lewis, you can be in the 0.5% of Mystery Hour listeners on your Spotify rap. You must be in the 0.5% of Mystery Hour contributors.
Maybe.
I reckon you are, actually.
Look at the stats.
Over the years. What have you got for me now? Question or answer?
I've got an answer.
Carry on.
It's to the family tree in genetics.
Oh, splendid.
So the answer is approximately 5 generations.
Wow.
Because when you're looking at it, she's looking at it like a family tree, like either she's at the bottom of the pyramid, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
Or that you look at it the other way and that grandparent is the top of the pyramid.
Yes.
When in reality, you're looking at a giant sort of rectangle,
yeah.
Cube, because there's people coming in and out of it all the time at different generations. So yes, she would share, if she was, let's say, 5 degrees of generation separated from...
I think she said great-great-great-grandma sibling, so it's only 4.
Great-great-grandma But, yeah, well, again, it's still, yeah, so she'll be more related than most, unfortunately.
Oh.
But
I knew this was going to go badly for her.
Once you start getting into these things, it's like a parabola in how it changes and the amount of people. So I was like, if she was about 5 generations away,
yeah,
she would share the same amount of genetic material as about 1,000 people.
Right.
So... Or, like, have 1,000, not 1,000, but, like, you would have so many people who would share similar traits, traits from those grandparents.
It wouldn't be noticeable, but it would be measurable.
You could probably tell that someone was from a region, or a certain ethnicity and things, you wouldn't be able to be like, these people are directly related. Because, like I said, it'd be about 1,000 people. Hopefully you can hear me with a Chinook going over the head.
Yeah, no, I can. Loud and clear. Nicely done as well. Qualifications?
I have a degree in medical genetics.
Of course you do. And it's served you in very good stead, at least on Mystery Hour.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's coming up to 12:29. Your list. Oh, round of applause for Lewis. First one of the day. So that takes us back to Claire's question, doesn't it? And there is Lewis. Just gone 12:29. Questions that still need answers, I will remind you of shortly. There's room for you to go on the board as Lewis vacates that phone line. You are free to grab it by dialing 03456060973. But Claire, I don't know what she's going to do with that information. It would be measurable, it would be traceable, but it would not be remarkable, is the short answer. Of course, under UK law, Claire, and this is the real point of your question, you would actually be legally able to marry Nigel Farage. So that's a big sigh of relief all round. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
A report says Vladimir Putin was morally responsible for the Salisbury nerve agent poisonings. The inquiry looked at the death into Dawn Sturgis, who was exposed to Novichok following the attempted murder of a former Russian spy in 2018. Britain and Norway have signed a defence pact to counter Russian submarine activity. The deal, combining warship patrols, is aimed at protecting critical undersea cables in the North Atlantic. And police could use the passport database as part of an expansion of facial recognition technology. Ministers want more forces to use the systems, but civil liberties campaigners say it risks creating a surveillance state. LBC weather, sunny spells with a few showers in the south and Northern Ireland. Staying cloudy with outbreaks of rain in the north, especially for western parts, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down,
not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
Mm-hmm.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They've got bags of offers and promotions kicking about.
Like what?
For a start, all them weekly promotions.
Oh, yeah?
There's the Loyalty Club, the BetVictor Predictor. And in Casino, they've got the Spinners Club, which is a weekly slot thingamajig. And you can also order food to your door.
Can you?
Oh, no, hang about. That's a different app.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:32 is the time. Mystery Hour obviously does brook interruption, and indeed some weeks we drop it entirely because of breaking news. And I do just want to draw your attention to that report into the attempted poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter in Salisbury in 2018, and the killing of Dawn Sturgis, a mother of 3, who died after being exposed to the nerve agent. I also want to do something, and this will be contained in the inquiry report. I don't want to suggest for a minute that it won't, but I've had the pleasure of meeting him on a couple of occasions, and his name is always absent from this coverage. And that's not a criticism of anybody at all, but Nick Bailey, Detective Sergeant Nick Bailey, as was, became very ill after, the nerve agent had been smeared on the door handle of the family home, and Nick was first on the scene. He was subsequently, he retired from the police force after the attack left him with health problems, and he's a really lovely bloke. I met him on a couple of occasions, and you always think about that story as being the failure to assassinate Sergei and Yulia Skripal. But of course, Dawn Sturgis's name for a while was absent from a lot of the coverage, a collateral damage, to use a cynical term. And Nick is almost always absent from the coverage because, you know, there's only so much detail stories can contain. But I just wanted to mention him by name because his life was turned upside down by that experience as well. More on this inquiry, no doubt, with colleagues on LBC throughout the day. You, however, are at the altogether shallower end of conversation at the moment. You're listening to Mystery Hour with James O'Brien on LBC. 2 phone lines free if you're quick. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Apparently it's called a moon bow, which is quite a felicitous phrasing, isn't it? A moon bow. So Martin and Maisie saw a moon bow last night without even knowing they were seeing a moon bow. And if, like me, you're a fan of alliteration, that's an almost perfect juxtaposition. Martin and Maisie's moon bow is what we're talking about today. That's lovely. Not, as one person has, I presume, accidentally typed on Blue Sky, not a moon boob. Definitely not a moon boob. But thank you. Thank you for sending me that message. Whatever you do, don't Google that. So we need to know about a moon bow. We need to know about why white noise is so soothing, particularly for newborn babies. Brackets. I think I've done it, but I didn't take a round of applause. Close brackets. Largely because I sensed Polly wouldn't have accepted my dubious expertise. Why does hair start growing roughly the time it starts falling out of the places where we actually want it? And why have I written down ears? Oh, ears and middle holes, and the and why it piercings. The same lobe with 3 holes in it can have, and we've done the question about the family trees as well, the same lobe with 3 holes in it can have completely different reactions to earrings. How does that work? So if we were to believe Nicola, and I've got no reason not to, her middle hole can accommodate only precious metals, while the outer holes can accommodate only I've forgotten the precise detail, but you get the gist. You get the gist. The number you need remains the same, whether you have a question or an answer. Pete's in Lincoln. Pete, question or answer?
Hi, James. Hello. It's an answer, please, to Maisie's question.
Yes, come on.
So, I love the term moonbow, by the way. I think that's great.
Isn't it nice? If it's a thing.
It's lovely. Yeah, it is. The answer is exactly that. It is a rainbow that they're seeing. What they're seeing is the reflected light off the moon coming back through the clouds that are surrounding or over the top of the moon, and that's doing a process called diffraction, and it's bending the light and separating it into its component parts in the same way a rainbow's made.
So how far from the moon will the clouds be?
Well, the clouds can be anywhere, up to about 1,000, 2,000 feet, I would imagine, that sort of level. And it's just the angle that they're at to the way they're seeing that.
Oh,
light,
that's what I thought. So it had a lot to do with where they were. Although a lot of people saw a moonbow last night, but that doesn't undermine your explanation.
It'll be more to do with the height of that cloud.
Yes.
And the distance of the moon from that cloud.
And the diffraction of the water droplets in the cloud, of the light through the water droplets in the cloud, is what creates the moonbow. How rare are they?
I think they are quite rare, actually. I don't think I've seen many. I think I've seen maybe one or two.
So a lot of people were photographing it last night, but it's very, very hard to photograph, as my inbox is now proving with all the people sending me photographs of it that might... that one I can see. It's like a halo. It goes all the way around the moon. Sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's because of that, because there's so little other light, and you're just getting that reflected light off the moon.
Yeah.
You're seeing it as a circle around it, whereas
exactly.
In the normal world, you only see the bit that's being reflected.
So all rainbows are circles, but you only see half of it in normal times, daytime.
Absolutely.
Times. Oh, qualifications, what a lovely answer.
Well, there you go. My qualifications are, I've just literally had a moment of serendipity, because I've come out of looking at a guy teaching a lesson on this exact subject of diffraction.
Wow.
So,
well, you were doing the lesson. You were the teacher.
I was qualifying somebody else delivering the lesson.
Good Lord.
And they were talking about diffraction of electromagnetic waves.
And here you are. And you're finding it in the wild, in real life.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Exactly.
Round of applause for Pete. Lovely stuff.
Thank you very much.
No, it's a lovely one. I like that. Also, Moonbow. Martin and Maisie's Moonbow. The mystery is solved. Lovely stuff. Surrey is in Hadleywood. Surrey, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question, please.
Carry on.
So I've been suffering with cramps in my legs during the night.
Oh.
And my son's godmother said, well, why don't you wear a pair of socks? That stops them. And so I did, and it stopped the cramps.
What sort of
socks?
So
my question is, they're not DBT socks, they're just normal socks, they're not particularly tight around the ankle.
Really?
So what's the connection?
Where were the cramps? In your calf?
Calf, feet.
Really?
Yeah.
It must have something
cramps.
To do with temperature, mustn't it? If the socks get rid of it?
I don't know.
I get cramps in one of my legs, but there is absolutely no way I am ever going to reveal on the radio the moments in my life where I get that particular cramp. But you got it every night. You got it all the time.
I was getting them so frequently, and honestly, I put these socks on, and those cramps have stopped. They were ever so bad.
Do you know, I'm such a miserable git. I was getting ready to get cross with you for a really boring question, and I was going to tell off Rebecca for putting through medical questions on Mystery Hour. It's not. It's like a sort of 1980s phone-in when people ring in with their medical problems. But it's actually really interesting.
It is. And it's not DVT talk.
No, just normal socks.
Know,
what, knee length, calf length?
Socks. No, just ankle socks, just up to the ankle.
So how did your daughter's godmother know this, do you think? Had she
My
been there herself?
Godmother. Well, you wouldn't believe. The godfather's brother, who lives in Spain, told her. So it's gone around the world.
This is an extraordinary international dimension to this question. Just when I thought it couldn't get any more interesting, it's gone global. This is extraordinary. You're on. Okay, why did Surrey's leg cramps disappear when she started wearing socks in bed? If you're just tuning in, this is, as I've said before, a slightly different hour of radio from the other 14 that we spend together, but it is nonetheless, in fact, it's probably the most illuminating. Why do babies get soothed by white noise? Why do men start growing hair where they don't want it at around the same time they start shedding it where they do want it? How can the same earlobe have three different reactions to metal when you have three piercings in the same single earlobe? And why did Surrey's leg cramps disappear when she started wearing socks in bed. What a lovely collection of questions. Is that the lot? Have I actually kept a fairly decent note this week? I think I have. 12:41 is the time. Remember, there's a free Mystery Hour board game to the winner. In fact, this week, depending on the detail, when Eleanor rings you, you may be able to choose between the original Mystery Hour board game and the new pocket-sized Mystery Hour board game. So that I would just not quite finalising detail. It's definitely going to be available before Christmas. Keep an eye on mysteryhour.co.uk for further details and ordering details. I think this is the week where I can say, when Eleanor rings you to say, congratulations, you've won, would you like to give me your address? She could also say, would you like the old one or the new one? Now, the old one is actually more expensive than the new one. It's a bigger game. It's like a traditional coffee table board game in a box, with my extremely handsome face on the cover of it. And it is quite an old picture, Keith. You're absolutely right. But my handsomeness is undimmed. And the new one is, I think it's going to be about $12.99, and it's in a little tin, and you can carry it around in your pocket, and it's, and we've changed the game slightly. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't want to own both. New questions, new cards, new everything, new rules. So it's up to you which one you want, whether you want the family-based board game, which would be quite nice at Christmas, and which is worth more than the new one, which is pocket-sized and perfect for sort of journeys and also at Christmas you could be travelling to meet. Anyway, I digress. So that is, it's imminently available, but not actually available at this precise moment. Full terms and conditions for the competition, because I give a free one to, as I say, my favourite contributor of the week, can be found at lbc.co.uk, and the games themselves can be found at mysteryhour.co.uk. Vivian is in Cheltenham. Vivian, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Vivian.
I was thinking about animals and allergies.
Oh, yes.
And I wondered, can animals be allergic to humans?
What are we allergic to? Are we allergic to mites or to dust or to fur? I can't remember.
As far as I was aware, I thought it was skin cells.
I think humans can be allergic to humans, can't they? You read the occasional terrible story about people who have to sort of live in a bubble. I think there's a John Travolta film about exactly that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it is. It's. I've never, ever thought about this in my life. Can animals be allergic to humans?
And then, I mean, it raises more questions, doesn't it? Because if you do have an animal that's allergic to you, how do you deal with it? How do you know they're allergic to you? You know,
yeah, you're only allowed one question, Vivian.
Sorry.
Is it possible for an animal to be allergic to a human?
Yes.
Or another human to be allergic to you?
Well, I'm only allowed one question, James.
Well, I know. I'm allowed as many as I want. I'm thinking of a few humans I think I might be allergic to. But, what a great question. What made you think of it?
My cat brought in a vole, a live vole.
Oh, yes.
And we got a humane mousetrap.
Oh, yeah.
The way you caught it was to put peanut butter in it.
Yes.
And my dad's allergic to peanuts.
Right.
And I suddenly started thinking about ways that animals could be allergic to things. And
this is the perfect answer to my question, because you've got three things going on: a human, an animal, and an allergy. And in your brain, you just sort of jumbled them all up and came up with a question of whether or not animals can be allergic to humans.
Yes, but I was somebody that called a couple of years ago and asked why pheasants were stupid, so.
When we work that out, I think of that question often. I was in the South Downs a couple of weeks ago, walking the South Downs Way, and we saw a pheasant outside the pheasant season, and I could tell that the people I was walking with were absolutely fascinated by my... Why are you laughing? They were absolutely fascinated by my theory that that means it was a clever pheasant, because it survived the first round of shootings, which means it wouldn't be as stupid this year, and it would have learnt things like, you know, crossing the road and stuff like that, or avoiding
absolutely
cars. I loved
I think
that.
I think you even made a pheasant sound. So, yes.
To imitate a pheasant.
Absolutely.
I love that question. I remember that question. And I
didn't even win a prize for it.
Well, let's not get carried away. You know, it was a decent question, Vivian. I like this week's as well. I like the way your brain works. Let's find out. Can we have animals that are allergic to humans? 0345 6060973. Thank you, Vivian. 12:46 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Who's afraid of more use of facial recognition to tackle criminals? Plus the WI and the Girl Guides are female only. Is that okay?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down,
not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Get that EuroMillions feeling with this Friday's £107 million mega jackpot. So super, you've got to dance. So let's dance like never before.
On a beach?
On your own private island.
EuroMillions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot subject to currency fluctuations. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. We haven't had this question for a while. Is Keith real, asks Phoebe, or a foil for your humorous ramblings? Oh, I like that. My first band was called the Humorous Ramblings. I forgot it was Thursday, and I've had a supreme treat while popping out. It's nice to know we're in your ears, Phoebe. Keith is real, but you... In fact, if you listen very closely, sometimes when he whispers his ludicrously awful jokes into my ear in the desperate and forlorn hope that I might repeat one out loud one day, because I certainly never steal them from him without credit and pass them off as my own. Perish the thought! But sometimes, if I'm leaning in closely to the microphone, or if the volume is a little bit higher on my headphones, you might actually hear Keith's voice. Ditto Eleanor, although her register is a little higher than Keith's. So you can hear both voices, but anyway, that's a little bit niche. Speaking of niche, I have a follow-up to the most outrageous attempt, I don't know what you'd call it, maligning a politician that I can remember seeing. The attempts this week by people who thought Boris Johnson was brilliant, Brexit was going to make everybody rich, austerity was necessary, Liz Truss was a financial genius, trying to attack Rachel Reeves over her childhood chess championships. Someone who's got more time on their hands than me has dug up this tweet from the beginning of last month by the bloke who started this story, someone called Alex Edmonds. And this is what he tweeted. Finally home after more than 8 hours of lectures and a conference keynote in my lunch break. My 3-year-old, colon quotes, do you need to work hard because the villain is taking our money? Me, which villain? My 3-year-old, Rachel. So, you know, if ever there was evidence of someone being both honest, completely unbiased and deeply reliable, it's this chap Alex Edmonds. It's funny that, because I got home last night and and I said to my 3-year-old, oh, I'm finally home after 3 hours of work and a tennis lesson. And my 3-year-old said, do you need to work? Because that person is talking absolute twaddle about Rachel Reeves and her chess championship history. And I said, which person? And my 3-year-old said, Alex Edmonds. Isn't that an extraordinary coincidence? And about as true as your story, pal. On your jog. Nancy's in Barnet. Nancy, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
This is the answer for Surrey, who lives in Hadley Wood, about her socks.
Thank you for the detail.
Okay, fine. Her socks, I don't know whether they're lined with terry cloth or they're just plain socks that are loose-fitting. But either way, when she goes to sleep, for whatever reason, the blood circulation in her legs changes. And what's changing is the air level between the muscle, the tissue, and the nerves. And because the nerve endings are in her feet, if there's not enough air there, you're automatically going to get a cramp. And when you wear the socks, you warm up all that air so the blood circulation can go back to normal.
So,
and that's so, why her
so
feet
the
don't
socks
hurt
increase
anymore.
Air circulation rather than reduce it.
Correct.
Unless she's wearing
the very special tight-fitting socks for those people who have low blood circulation.
She's not. She specifically said she was not wearing DVT socks.
Right. So as long as she's not wearing DVT socks or those socks that are helping the people who are diabetic, who actually
then
have
that's
this
what
in
it
her
is.
Foot, if she knew how much she was preventing by eliminating those cramps for her future, she's eliminating almost everything that is a cell-related disease, cellulitis, which if you get it in a major organ, you are a goner.
Good Lord, this has taken an unexpected turn. What are your qualifications, Nancy?
Oh, so I was a medical researcher for over 20 years out of the UK.
Wow.
And I spent several, five terms with a specialist hematologist and a team of podiatric surgeons.
And that is how you know so much about socks.
Not only the socks, but about why people are born with foot deformation.
All right, seriously, it was quite a jolly question.
How the elderly people, especially those people who've suffered stroke or Parkinson's, are suffering in their circulation.
You are a legend. Oh, what an amazing contribution to the program. And the way you say socks is a thing of beauty. It reminds me of one of my, favorite jokes. That's great. I haven't told it yet. Would you like to hear it or not? No, you wouldn't, would you? No, not remotely.
Yeah.
Okay, so Bill Clinton turns up in Ireland during the peace process with his sacks. And they said, why have you brought your sacks? And he said, I'm here to support the cause. You don't get that. You're so polite. There was a popular beat combo at the time called The Cause. It's a pun. Yeah. But also the way, say socks for me one more time.
Socks.
Socks. Round of applause for Nancy.
Now, the other thing is, listeners need those loose-fitting socks, they only sell them in the M&S men's department.
Really? They're the best ones for the cramps?
They're the best ones that are loose-fitting.
Well,
Surrey
and Hadley Wood was wearing any old socks.
Yeah, but you know what? It could be that she's wearing the travel socks that are lined loosely with the terry cloth.
She could be. She may get back in touch. She'll struggle to get through, frankly. But anyway, the travel socks or the normal socks, any old socks, but not the DVT socks.
No, those DVT socks, they will literally ruin her legs.
What? No, they won't. You can't say that. People need to wear them sometimes on planes and things. But anyway, we've covered enough socks for one day. Thank you very much. Seek your own guidance on socks. DVT socks, normal socks, travel socks, or musical socks, or tenor socks, alto socks, or bass socks. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Nancy, thank you. Adam's in Wembley. Adam, question or answer?
Oh, James, I'm laughing at the way you say socks.
It's not the way I say socks, it's the way Nancy says socks. I've got an earworm now. Carry on.
Socks, say it all the same. I'm answering the question about body hair.
I just got deja vu.
Yeah, I have answered this question before.
That was last week. We had a question about deja vu. Did we answer it? I think we answered it. And now I'm not getting deja vu. You have answered it before.
Yeah, but it wasn't last week. We had a question
about deja vu last week.
Maybe I wasn't listening last
week. Why not? You're never going to get in the top 0.5% of listeners, mate, if you skip a week. Although you wouldn't be listening on Spotify anyway. Go on. Go on.
I do listen. I do listen most weeks. And quick shout out to my friend Sab, who I know is listening.
Hey, Sab. Stay safe, mate. Carry on.
The answer is twofold. I think the first, he was asking around, why do you not have hair where you want it to be? So yes. Typically, men want hair on their head. And indeed, the reason that as you age, you don't have hair on your head is because of hormonal shifts, hormonal changes, hormonal imbalances. And you have hair follicles all over your body, except for the palms of your hand and the soles of your feet. So as we age, your body becomes more sensitive to testosterone.
Yes.
And your body metabolizes testosterone to a enzyme called dihydrogetestosterone, known as DHT.
Yes.
And that your scalp becomes the most sensitive to that, which is why you become bald there.
And out it falls.
And then, exactly, and why you then have in the hair follicles in the rest of your body, i.e. your shoulders, your chest, your back, it grows there. You notice it more there.
Qualifications?
I'm a pharmacist, and I'm also bald.
And you got very hairy ears? No
comment.
No, all right. Random surprise you could hear me. Making myself laugh today. It's not healthy. Great work, Adam. John's in Manchester. John, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on, John.
It's the answer to the white noise soothing babies.
Oh.
This is taught in medical school that it simulates to unborn babies the noise of the mum's blood pumping round.
I kind of said that. Keith said that as well.
Yeah, so that's what's taught, and that's similarly to lots of people, myself included. So rain noise,
yes,
being played on an app, steaming kettle, those sort of things. That it simulates a comfort recall for babies.
Lovely.
That helps them soothe.
Qualifications?
I'm a practicing GP.
That'll do. Is that a qualification to answer this? Oh, yes, it is. Of course it is. Sorry.
General practice. Yeah,
no, of course
medical
it is.
Medical school.
Yeah, well played. Have a medical school. Carry on. Round of applause.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Lovely stuff. Have we done it all this week? Have we got any? Oh, we never found an animal who's allergic to a human. And the piercings as well. Nicola's piercings. Maybe it's just you and your mum, Nicola. I did posit that at the time. That's it. Crikey, is that the time already? I can tell it must be, because Sheila Fogarty's already here. It's coming up to 12:59. It's obvious who's won. Martin and Maisie win the game. But remember that you can decide whether you want the old game, like the full-sized box version, or the new game, which isn't actually available yet, but will be by this time next week. So we should be able to work either of them out. One of them's worth more, or costs more, at mystery.co.uk, but the other one is newer. So there is an interesting dimension to your decision-making process. That is it for me from today. All of the things I forgot to do yesterday, and indeed today, I promise you I will do tomorrow. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back and perhaps point out some of the things I've forgotten to do that I've now forgotten that I forgot to do. You can do that on the free Global Player app, or indeed the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and the opinions, and put your news categories in the order you want, and pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily and Full Disclosure. And Mystery Hour, a separate Mystery Hour podcast as well. Be like Reese, be in the top 0.5% of listeners next year. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4. But now, on LBC, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. From 3 today, the government thinks that some, I stress, are being referred needlessly for mental health, ADHD and autism appointments. Are they? And on what scale? Two, the WI and the Girl Guides are amongst a number of organisations wrestling with this issue. They will now abide by the law on sex-based rights and sex-based access to certain places and groups. I think it's the right decision. Not an easy one for everybody involved, but I think it's the right decision. We'll talk about that at two. But first, though, call me a lemming, a surf, a dolt, whatever you want, but I'm supremely unbothered by police extending the use of facial recognition tech. Are you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, an inquiry into the poisoning of Dawn Sturgis following a nerve agent attack in Salisbury was unsurvivable from the early stages. The 44-year-old died after being exposed to Novichok following the attempted murder of former Russian spy Sergei Skripal in 2018. Chair Lord Hughes says those who authorised the mission, up to and including President Putin, are to blame for her death.
That conduct was astonishingly reckless. There is a direct causal link between the actions of all those individuals and Dawn Sturgis' death. And they, and only they, bear moral responsibility for it.
Skripal and his daughter Yulia, as well as a police officer who was exposed while responding to the initial attack, all survived. The UK and Norway have signed an agreement to counter Russian submarine activity in the North Atlantic. The pact, which will combine warship patrols, is aimed at protecting critical undersea cables. Civil liberties groups have warned an expansion of facial recognition risks creating a surveillance state. The Home Office has announced plans for the controversial technology to be used by more police forces to fight crime. It's opened a consultation that could pave the way for new laws. Josie Allen from the charity Missing People says it's not just about catching criminals.
We think there's real opportunities for live facial recognition to help find people who are at immediate risk, whether they've been harmed by someone else or whether they're at risk of harming themselves. There's a real chance to use that technology. It's not being used loads at the moment. We know of a few incidents, but it's not being routinely used.
The Health Secretary has announced a review into the rising demand for mental health services. Wes Streeting has previously claimed that conditions are being diagnosed too much and we need evidence about why that is. And Liverpool Street in London has retained its title as Britain's busiest railway station. There were 98 million entries and exits in the year to April. That compares to 68 at the least used station, Elton and Austin in Nottinghamshire. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 13 points at 97.05. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, sunny spells with a few showers in the south and northern Ireland. Staying cloudy with outbreaks of rain in the north, especially for western parts, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. We are hurtling towards an authoritarian surveillance state, and we're about to be turned into an open prison. Not my view, the view of Big Brother Watch. About facial recognition, the expansion of facial recognition cameras and the use thereof and the technology and the use thereof in dealing with criminality. I may have, it's entirely possible I have a kind of half-informed blind spot about this, and that's where you come in, if you think I have. I'm pretty relaxed about this. And I know that many of you aren't, but I am. I mean, I know it's slightly different, but I had Monday or Tuesday night, I can't remember which now because it was so traumatizing to actually do. I spent 2 hours, precious free time, doing a compulsory verification on Company's House of who I am. The whole thing took me 2 hours. I'm not great at this stuff, but it took me 2 hours. And I tweeted at the time, roll on digital ID for every service we access, because I'm done with this. Hours and hours spent navigating the sort of whole process of online admin. I know that's separate to this, but it's kind of where I come from on it, in a way. And I'm sure it's informing my view that we can be relaxed about the use of facial recognition technology. Are you relaxed about the extended use of it, or plans to extend the use of it. The 10-week public consultation, so let's treat this conversation this hour as part of that public consultation, I guess. And of course, you can formally contribute to that consultation. A 10-week consultation on how to regulate the technology. And that's important. I'm not completely blind to the risks. I think that is important. That consultation has been launched, could pave the way for these new laws. So we're not there yet. It's been used already by some forces since 2017. And it has found suspects and vulnerable people as well. It's not all about criminality, as well as monitoring live events, finding people who have broken the terms of their license on probation and need to be brought back to prison. We've seen dreadful cases where people in that position have gone on in that brief period of freedom, not always brief, but in the case I have in mind, it was to murder a woman. Police and Crime Minister Sarah Jones says the wider rollout could mark the biggest breakthrough in catching criminals since the use of DNA was introduced into criminal investigation. Where do you stand on this? Am I too relaxed about it? 0345 6060 973, the number to call. You can text 84850. Charlie Welton joins me, Policy and Campaigns Officer at Liberty, who I suspect thinks I am too relaxed about it, the UK's largest civil liberties organisation. Charlie, what am I missing?
First of all, thank you very much for having me on. The first thing I want to say is that I'm really glad that we're having this conversation now. As you say, the police have been using this technology for a while. Liberty actually won the first legal case anywhere in the world relating to police use of this technology about 5 years ago. But we didn't see any regulation after that. In fact, we saw very little public debate. There's been no overarching law being put in place. Parliament has barely touched upon it. But police have been using it, and I must say, have been using it in different ways. They've had to kind of make it up as they go along. And I think, however relaxed you are about the technology itself, that's not a recipe for good policing.
No, I would agree with you. I would agree with you there that a very important public conversation, and a very important, it's very important that it's thrashed out in Parliament and shaped properly if we're going to go down this route. That I wouldn't have any disagreement with you on at all, Charlie. And it's not even that I come at this with a disagreement. I just read about it and think this feels like a useful tool. Again, mostly in criminality, but not just that, for missing people, that kind of thing, you know, elderly people with dementia who've gone missing, that kind of thing. It seems to have a place.
Well, we certainly understand the desire of police forces and the Home Office to use it, because it is a powerful tool. All that we're really asking for is for a common sense set of safeguards, so that it's used in a targeted way, so that people know how it's being operated, so there's proper oversight. All of this is just stuff that the EU already does. We're not really asking for anything beyond that, because, you know, the Home Office and the police do talk about when they've caught a very dangerous person and so on, and we can absolutely understand the utility of it for that purpose. What we are concerned about is the way in which this has proliferated, and it has grown in this way, which, as I say, has been different in different areas and has gone in ways that we've found quite hard to really kind of get a grasp on.
Explain which ways it's being used that make you nervous.
Well, one of the things that we would be looking to try to explore in the consultation